Welcome to Manga Cubed, episode 89, your one-stop for manga news and commentary for the week of March 17th, 2014. I am your host, Derek, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mo.
Morning?
Yeah. More or less morning. Pardon. Alright, well, we have stuff to talk about.
We do.
Yes. Yeah, it's kind of surprising. We're slowly getting towards episode 100. I didn't even think we'd last this long. I'm kind of impressed by us. Sorry, what'd you say, Mo?
Your week.
Oh, yes. My week was... Okay, I took a long weekend. Used some of my vacation time to take yesterday off. So, yeah.
I... The medicine I was taking made me feel like weird cramps all over, so when I stopped taking them, I feel better now, thankfully, but now I can't sleep.
Lovely. Well, I can never sleep anyway, so
yeah, woohoo. I think turn the lights off. I can sleep in the dark now.
All right, yeah. Yeah, all right, well, let's go ahead and get into the news for this week.
Yeah.
Yes, starting with the Japanese comic rankings for March 3rd through 9th. And let's see, starting in 10th place, what do we have here?
Library Wars, Love and the War, Volume 13.
In 9th place, we have The New Prince of Tennis, Volume 12.
8th place, Nisekoi, Volume 11.
7th place, Toriko, Volume 29.
6th place, Bleach, Volume 62.
5th place, Assassination Classroom, Volume 8.
4th place, Kuroko no Basuke, Volume 26.
3rd place, Silver Spoon, Volume 11.
2nd place, Naruto, Volume 68.
And in 1st place, One Piece, Volume 73, with...
An
estimated 2,075,407 copies sold within that last week alone.
A whopping finger guess.
What?
Really overshadowed Naruto.
By more than half, yeah. It's... Sorry about that. Yeah, more than half. That is really, really bizarre. Well, actually, no, it's not bizarre. I mean, this is what's expected. I'm just glad that One Piece is back, so now we can talk about how laughably inadequate the second best series is this week. Ha ha. So, yep. Alright. Let's see. Alright, moving on. We have the New York Times manga bestseller list for March 2nd through 8th, and starting with 10th place we have...
Attack on Titan Volume 1. Still hanging in there.
Wow. Yep. 9th place we have Fairy Tail Volume 35.
8th place, we have Midnight Secretary, Volume 4.
1st place, we have Phantom Thief Jean, Volume 1.
6th place, Nijigahara Holograph, Volume 1. Oh, that one.
5th place, Nisekoi, False Love, Volume 2.
4th place, Black Bird, Volume 18. I almost said Black Butler.
Yeah. 3rd place, Pokemon Adventures, Volume 21.
2nd place, Blue Exorcist, Volume 11.
And in 1st place, we have One Piece, Volume 70. Oh, sweet. Huh, I think this might... I don't know if this is the first time, but... Yeah, you don't see One Piece on the top of this list very often, do you?
Well, most of the volumes here are new, so they're like...
Yeah. Looks like Fairy Tail dropped from 1st place to 9th place in its second week.
No, it dropped from 2nd to... dropped from 2nd to 9th. First
and
not. Whoa, wow. I see it now.
Yeah, I was like, dude, it says one.
I was thinking of weeks on the list.
No, it's only been on the list 2 weeks. But yeah. All right, let's see, what else do we have? We have the North American anime and manga releases for March 9th through the 15th. And starting with the anime releases, we have Excel World, Blu-ray and DVD set 2.
Digimon Adventure Volume 6, DVD.
We have Digimon Data Squad Season 5 DVD Complete Collection.
Ikitosen Extreme Executor and OVA DVD Complete Collection.
We have The Pet Girl of Sakurazo, Blu-ray Collection Volume 2 and DVD Collection 2.
Psychopaths, Season 1, DVD, Blu-ray, Part 1 and Part 2.
And Season 1, Blu-ray Complete Collection Premium Edition. Huh.
Is it just me, or have we not seen Aniplex published on here lately?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen anything ridiculously expensive, except for that Psychopass Blu-ray Complete Premium. It's like, oh, dude.
Funimation, please, don't do what they're doing.
Well, I mean, I can understand it if it's a premium, but still, that's a lot of money. Good thing I don't give two craps about that series, so...
I don't know what that series is about.
Something about, kind of like that one Tom Cruise movie, what was it again,
You mean the one that...
Minority Report, that's it.
Oh.
Yeah, you know, they're sort of like, oh, we've predicted you'll do something wrong, and now we will kill you or something. I don't know. It's like, apparently it starts off the first episode with a woman in the process of being raped. So I'm thinking, no, you can go to hell, you piece of shit. So yeah. Manga releases. 07 Ghost, Volume 9.
Arata, The Legend, Volume 17.
Attack on Titan Before the Fall, Volume 1.
You should get that. Attack on Titan Junior High, Volume 1. You should get that, too.
I'd rather get that one than Before the Fall. I read a couple chapters of Before the Fall, and it hasn't done anything to impress me yet. Because, quite frankly, it's kind of hard to enjoy a series that's based on people swinging around like Spider-Man when you're reading a story before they're swinging around like Spider-Man.
Good point.
Yeah. Let's see what else. Drifters Volume 3.
I want to get that. But I don't even have Volume 1.
Yeah.
Oh, the funny thing is the main character finally got to appear is gonna appear as a playable character in Samurai Warriors 4. I'm gonna just mention
it. Say what?
I was like, finally!
Manga characters normally appear in those games?
No. But the character that he's based on, right?
Okay, I got you. You're right.
Sadly, I know what happened to him. Sadly, but yeah. Next up is Embracing Love, Volume 2, Omnibus.
Fullmetal Alchemist, Volumes 19-21, Omnibus.
Hide and Seek, Volume 2.
My Little Monster, Volume 1.
Oh, how apropos. Ranma 1/2. Volume 1 and 2 Omnibus. You said you got that.
I do. We're going
to
go over that.
I was trying to guess that. And I was like, I don't know what to guess anymore.
Yep, we're going to go over that at some point. Probably next week.
I guess he got a cat, but then I realized he already had a cat.
Yes, indeed. Speaking of which, Sherlock Bones, Volume 4.
That's about a dog, anyways.
Indeed.
Other releases we have is Atelier Aisha and Logi, Alchemist of the Dust Sky for the PS3. Dark Souls 2 for the PS3, Xbox 360.
Mo, remember that conversation we had about being too quiet and too loud?
Oh, okay. And Yoshi's Island, the 3DS.
Not that quiet, but don't yell in my ear, please.
I'm just so upset. I can't play Dark Souls, even the first one. Now 2 just came out. I can't even enjoy it.
Well, if you want to experience the Dark Souls 2 experience, please keep yelling in my ear, and I will find you and make sure you experience that experience.
Okay, I'll stop.
All right, thank you. Okay, what else do we got?
Okay, for some other news.
Indeed.
Atsushi Okubo is going to work on the Soul Eater Not manga's last volume. He first noted that the manuscript for the chapters will run until the June issue of Square Enix's monthly Shonen Gangan magazine, which will ship on May 12th. He then explained that entering the story in the final volume of the manga, that he's just entering the story, the story in the final volume of the manga. He wants to avoid spoilers before the upcoming anime airs. And then you're not going to know the story until the anime airs.
Interesting.
Yeah, the series is ending, so hopefully his next series will be just as fun as Soul Eater, and maybe he'll be able to be more... He's not as risque as Mashima's been, so... And not as risque as... And not even as risque as Matsuina's been.
Well, duh. Nobody's been as risque as him. Okay. But, yeah, I'm... Yes, I haven't been reading that one, so I got nothing to add.
It's a spin-off. It's a spin-off.
Well, I know that, but I don't know anything about it, so.
I have no idea how the connection works. I guess at the very end, I'll probably figure out the connection between that and the main series. Like how Jocko did. Except that was pretty cool regardless.
Yeah, that one was enjoyable despite even without the connection, but yes. All right, what else do we have?
Miracle Jump Magazine returns next month.
Okay. All right, what do they got?
Joyce's Young Jump Magazine will announce its 15th issue on Thursday, and Miracle Jump Magazine will return next month. So basically, it went on hiatus to recharge, and it announced last June that it's revamping Miracle Jump Magazine as a monthly publication for spring. The series will debut with a bunch of series I've never even read. Yeah,
Fun
and
times.
others I have no idea, but yeah. What some I recognize, Samurai Usagi, at least from the title, but I don't recognize what. Ninjo Tachi no Hanakago. Why is that some from Mermaid something? Something. Wait. Wait. Nah, I don't remember. Anyways.
Yeah. All
Thanks.
right.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay, what else do we got?
Crunchyroll releases Ajin, Koe no Katachi, and Arslan manga.
Cool.
Sadly, as we know, they're up to date on the chapter, so unless you have a premium membership, you ain't gonna be able to read it.
Indeed. Yep. Better go get that premium membership, yo.
When I, yeah, I'm not, I'm gonna stop mentioning that, otherwise I'm gonna keep thinking myself. Anyways, so I already described Ajin some in a few podcasts ago, a few recordings, blah. Has to go. The story of Silent Voice, which is Koe no Katachi, is described as, "I wish we had never met. I wish we could meet once again. A boy who can hear, Shoya Ishida, and a transfer student who can't, Shoko Nishimiya. One fateful day, the two meet, and Shoya leads a class in bullying Shoko, but before long, the class shifts its attention, a target, from Shoko to Shoya." Okay. Years later, Shoya feels strongly that he must see Shoko once again.
Interesting.
The author added that she wanted to write it with the thought of people living in isolation. "I wrote this story out of the desire to write about people living distant, isolated lives. Nothing will make me happier if you all read my story." Okay. So
All right.
the girl's death ending. Boy bullied her, and then people started bullying him later.
Well, to be fair, I kind of feel like you kind of deserve it, you jerk.
Yeah.
Right.
And
And.
Arslan. I finally see how Darion looks like.
Yeah, I kind of, yeah, the Arslan one I kind of want to read. I don't know, I haven't heard much about it, besides that it's, written by the lady that wrote Fullmetal Alchemist, so.
Yeah.
Probably be pretty decent, but then again, I heard that Legend of Legendary Heroes or whatever else she did was no good. So,
Legendary Heroes, what?
I don't know, something like that. But anyway, what else do we have?
Oh, Legend of Galactic Heroes.
I don't think that's what I'm thinking of, but anyway.
It's out there.
Yeah, carry on.
Okay, the world God only knows manga is going to end in the next volume. Volume 26 will be the last.
Interesting. We should probably read that sometime.
if we ever get the chance to.
Indeed. Indeed. All right. So,
Yeah.
yeah. What does it have any specifics about that?
No, it was just announced through the 25th volume, on the 25th volume, on the wraparound jacket.
Well,
Just pretty much
nice.
just mentions that it had a three anime series, extreme on Crunchyroll. I think probably still streaming on Crunchyroll. Sentai Filmworks released the first two seasons on home video in North America, and also, the series also inspired several sequel and spin-off OVAs. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, Alright, and last bit of news. What do
and
we have?
First things up, last bit of news, Berserk manga scheduled for April return. It will be, it's dated for an April 11th return. 411. Japanese phone number for 911.
Yeah. Oh gee, how apropos. I'm thinking this series is never gonna end, so likely, you know, because it's just with all the breaks that it takes, you kind of get the feeling that the author is going to pass away before he finishes the series. So, yeah.
How about GoGo 13, though?
Good point.
The author, I don't know if the author takes breaks, so I'm pretty sure he takes breaks. He's older now, much older.
Well, yeah, but I don't think he doesn't have, you know, an ending that his story needs, while Berserk is kind of like one of those where, you know, it needs an ending. It's not just
heard the plot jump from one plot to a different plot to another plot. Still in the same plot, but within a plot in its own plot.
Pretty much, is I guess. So I guess it's kind of a, hey, these stories stand on their own. But with Berserk, it's kind of, these stories don't stand on their own. Please finish them.
Yeah.
So.
his previous series, the series that he just finished up.
Wait, he was doing a different series?
Yeah, Giganto Maxio.
Well, that's stupid. It's like, finish your damn series before starting a new series.
Well, you want to take a break. He was supposed to finish in 6 chapters, but apparently went on a little longer than it should.
Ah, you don't say. Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully he finishes Berserk soon. I kind of want to see how everything ends, and hopefully things end as well as that series can be expected.
Yeah, don't expect much. You know how the series goes.
Well, yeah, but nonetheless.
Just know it will never be as bad as Wolf Guy, Wolf and Crest.
Too late for that. Yeah. But anyway, okay, I think that does this for the news, doesn't it?
Yeah.
All right, well, let's go ahead and move on to the next segment. It's time for the weekly manga review for Manga Cubed. This week we're going over Volume 2 of Nisekoi, making this the... Let's see... Fairytale, Genshiken, Nisekoi... Okay, making this the third series that we will be up to date on. Which,
cool.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. That means we'll be able to... will be a third series that we can review as new volumes come out. And this volume... Actually, while we are here, we should... double check and see. I think the volume 3 is going to be a while. But let's see. Yeah, there's a couple other series that I know. Let's see. Volume 3 is out in... Oh, that's May. Okay. Yeah, May. That will give us plenty of time. And... Oh, what are they calling the Shokugeki no Soma now? Cooking Wars?
No, they cannot be calling it that.
Something similar, let me look it up. Because I know that's a series that we've been talking about, and when the first volume comes out, it's definitely one I want to... Food Wars, that's it.
Oh!
Well, that's basically what the title means. It means...
It doesn't sound cool.
Well, that's the weird thing. They're calling it Food Wars, and then the subtitle is the original title, Shokugeki no Soma.
Oh, which, man, you're kidding me.
Yeah, well, the first volume is available digitally, but as far as, this is kind of an unofficial rule, but our review rules are basically, it has to be a physical volume. Which is why we haven't gone through Cross-Manage yet. Let me have a physical release of Cross-Manage, damn it.
It's a physical release of Shokugeki no Soma already. I mean, Soma's cooking
game. That's available in August.
The print?
Yeah, print volume's available in August. There was one that we were thinking about that is available in December. Do you remember what that one is?
Assassination Classroom.
That's it. Okay, yeah, there's another one we need.
I won't say the original Japanese name because that's hard to say already.
Ansatsu Kyoshitsu.
Ansatsu Kyoshitsu. Shu. Ju. Juju.
That sounded awful.
I know.
Yeah. Let me actually check that, see if it's they've got it up for pre-order on Amazon yet.
It's in my language anyway.
Yeah. It... Nope. Oh, wait. Oh, it is available for pre-order. It's just there's no information available, so don't need to worry about that just yet.
Not yet.
Although I guess I probably, since pre-ordering it doesn't take my money yet, I guess if I pre-ordered it now, it wouldn't make much of a difference, you know? But at least that way I wouldn't have to think about it all the time and it would just freaking get delivered to me.
Yeah, but then what if you end up moving to a new place while realizing, oh, crap.
Well, if I change my address on Amazon, it will change the address that's being sent to, maybe. Actually, that's a very good point. I don't think it does it automatically. But I don't know. I've got my fingers crossed for by that point we'll have figured out some way to get review copies so I wouldn't have to actually buy it. But if that doesn't happen, I'm buying it anyway. I love that series.
Which one?
Both of them, actually.
Yep.
Yeah. It is, but, yeah, well, speaking of series that I love and honestly didn't think we'd get physical releases for, but yet here I am holding the second volume in my hand, Nisekoi. Now, as we were saying last week, I know we said something, but I can't remember what exactly.
Was there something about omitting the final chapter of Volume 1?
Oh, yeah, from the anime. Yes, that did
keep going. That was a one-off chapter, like you said, and I was like, but it's still important.
Yeah, not sure why they omitted that, but whatever. Okay, let's talk about Volume 2 itself. And honestly, yeah, the first half of the volume, I won't go into major details, but the first half of the volume is basically one-off chapters that show Raku and how Raku and Chitoge are getting closer together, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, and these are kind of the chapters that really got me into the series in the first place, because they have some of the,
expressions.
Yeah, they have the best facial expressions. I think the first chapter in this volume where they're, you know, all going to do study together, and you've got Ruri that keeps playing matchmaker for Onodera and Raku, and you get some pretty amazing expressions from the two of them. And then, of course, you also have Chitoge, who is able to teach Raku what, you know, able to teach Onodera what Raku can't, and just the smug expression on her face is brilliant.
That's the one.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and
it's like just like.
Yeah, and then there are like these moments, like, you know, at the end of each chapter, kind of like, you know, these little moments that are like, oh look, the characters are getting closer together. Is like kind of, you know, kind of scenes. They're very much there to show that, oh hey, these two probably will definitely have a thing. And so it's kind of basically the same thing, like Chitoge continues hating him, but then at the end of the chapter or the end of the story, since some of them take more than one chapter, she realizes, oh wait, there's actually, you know, he's not so bad. Like, I really like the ones where after this swimming competition and he saved her and she keeps trying to apologize to him and she absolutely sucks at it. Those are pretty brilliant. And then, of course, she reveals to Ruri and Onodera that Raku and her are not actually dating. So that plotline is resolved pretty quickly. I mean, you know, they still have to pretend, but at least now they have both have friends that are aware that they are not actually dating. Yeah. And with that, we kind of move into Onodera saying that she will confess her feelings, and we get a brilliant facial expression from her when she tries to do that, but just gets completely embarrassed. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I like her character so much, is we've gotten some of the best expressions from her. And we go back into another case of Raku losing his pendant and then Chitoge finding it, and that kind of basically just turns out into another one of those, hey, she's actually being really nice, you know, and we finds out that, oh, she fixed the chain. And so he kind of, a lot of moments in the first half of the volume were her realizing that he's not such a bad guy. This part was him realizing she's not so bad. But yeah, we also have a almost confession scene between Ruri, Onodera, and Raku, while at the same time you find out that Chitoge knows the word, the phrase
it means always in Polish. And I was like, I looked that up and I was like, Polish?
Why? Yeah, that's something to think of. Why Polish? I mean, it specifically mentions in Volume 1 that Chitoge is American, but granted, being American doesn't mean you are American just that. But it does usually mean your knowledge of languages is a little bit limited. So why she knows Polish, I don't know.
Maybe her dad's part Polish. You know, he's a Polish gangster.
It could, yeah, it's definitely possible. I mean, there are there are people of Polish descendant, of people with Polish ancestry that live in the U.S., so it's 100% possible, but it's just so weird that it's never explained what, at least I don't think it's ever explained what it means. I think it does kind of mean they do kind of mention in the beginning where it's like, oh, it means forever in love, but you know, we're never told why. So you kind of have to wonder, that's such an odd word to have there without any explanation of what language it comes from.
I guess it just sounded cool to Naoshi when he came up with it.
When he thought of it, I guess. But there might be some, I want to believe that there is some significance to it. But yeah, we basically find out that Onodera isn't able to confess her feelings because a baseball breaks the window. But yeah, so now we have both girls. Onodera has a key that looks like it fits the lock, and she believes that she's, or at least she thinks she's the girl. And then, although you'd think it'd be easier to remember that, it was like, maybe he can't remember what the girl looks like, but she's like, hey, I do remember that pendant. But at the same time, now Chitoge is revealing that she knows something of what happened then, or at least she knows the phrase that was spoken then. So how would she know that exactly is what we want to discover. And also, I want to point out right before when Ruri makes it possible for Onodera and Raku to be alone, I just love the way Komi draws, the way she disappears, where she's just like doing the whole like sort of like, I don't even know what that symbol is. It's like doing like a pistol with your fingers, but I don't know. It's like she's doing like a sort of like a weird salute as she runs away to leave them alone. But yep. And then from there we get to our part of the story where I immediately started thinking, hey, this seems a lot like Ranma 1/2, doesn't it?
I was like, and he told me, and I was like, what do you mean? And then he's like, don't you remember that episode?
Yeah, because, okay.
That episode, there's a lot of episodes I don't remember.
Well,
the Phoenix one.
Yeah, so to make things clear, we meet Tsugumi, who is the bodyguard of Chitoge, who comes in. And challenges Raku to a fight. And of course, the fight doesn't go well for Raku because Tsugumi is an assassin who brings guns to the table.
But it was never a fist fight.
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah. And then Raku kind of has to run away, but then he jumps out of the window and they fall into the pool. All right. So this is absolutely 100% identical to the fight between Ranma and Tatewaki Kuno in Ranma 1/2.
That one, okay.
Yep. And then we then further discover where somehow Raku manages to stay conscious while Tsugumi passes out, which I don't know how that works. But he decides, okay, I need to get him out of these wet clothes, otherwise he's gonna, you know, get a cold. But then, boobs. Turns out that Tsugumi is in fact a girl. Which is not quite identical in the execution as the jumping into the swimming pool was, but the concept and location is very similar to that of when Ukyo in Ranma 1/2 again is revealed to in fact be a girl.
Wait, I thought you were talking about Tatewaki Kuno. What the heck are you talking about?
It's, as I was saying, it's a compound of two elements from Ranma 1/2.
Oh.
The jumping out of the window into the pool is Kuno. the main character discovering that the person he was fighting is a girl is Ukyo.
Okay.
Where in Ranma 1/2, it happens because he accidentally grabs her chest in, you know, after her chest bindings are, you know, cut and loosened during the fight, and he accidentally grabs her chest while in the storage shed. Here, it's not the exact same, but it is in the changing room where he discovers, which is, like, you know, changing room, it's connected to gym as well, but nonetheless, it's not quite the same, but nonetheless, it is kind of a bit of a compound of two elements from Ranma 1/2, which, yeah, when I first saw this, I was just kind of thinking, okay, wait a minute, this is identical, practically. So I was a little iffy about the series at the time, but, you know, as time passed, I decided, you know what, it actually works for me, still. I like it, nonetheless. But still, that was one of those moments where I was just thinking, okay, the twist about the, oh, this is a guy, but no, it's actually a girl, Ranma 1/2 did it, jumping out of the pool to end a fight, Ranma 1/2 did it. Yeah, that seems a bit peculiar.
At least the censors didn't do it.
No, they didn't. But
they can't do it.
No, there's no way. But, you know, but nonetheless, it is kind of an odd concept that, you know, already this series so far seems to be borrowing heavily from other mediums. I mean, the whole two people being in a relationship / engaged in the case of Ranma 1/2, very similar between the two series, and then you have another thing borrowing from Ranma 1/2 again, which seems a bit odd. But at the same time, I kind of find that the only thing that keeps me from calling plagiarism is the fact that the series takes it all and does its own, you know, kind of does its own thing with it. The jumping into the pool is definitely the most egregious moment, because that seems less inspired by and more this is the exact same scene, you know? But then the other elements are, you know, definitely feel more like they were inspired by. So you get this sense of, oh, hey, this is a series that, you know, is taking beats from other series, from classic series, and doing it in its own way,
when you mention it like that, other series have done it too. So,
but not as obviously as Nisekoi did here, you know? I mean, specifically that one specific scene is what, with them jumping out of the pool, is what makes you kind of realize, think, you know, this seems kind of similar to other parts of Ranma 1/2 too, with a basic premise down to the reveal of, oh, we thought this was a guy, but it's actually a girl. I mean, the whole, this guy turns out to be actually a girl has been done by many, many manga, so that part's fine. It's just the fact that you add the jumping out of a window into the pool makes it seem very, and then the basic concept kind of makes you start making those connections more, which,
jumping out of the window into a pool is a bit extreme. What do you miss?
Yeah, and I don't know any other manga that really do that, so it is kind of difficult to say that's just a coincidence. But at the same time, the reason why it doesn't bug me is because Nisekoi just really is bringing its own stuff to the table. The expressions that we get from the facial expressions alone from the characters and just the comedic timing definitely sets it apart from a lot of other romantic comedies, especially the one that it is borrowing certain concepts from. You know, the faces that you get from them are definitely better than anything I really ever saw in Ranma 1/2. And so, yeah. That alone, and also the characters are different, and they are, you know, the situation overall, the stories, the way they're told are just, you know, their own thing. And I find that that is what makes it a lot more entertaining than just something that you look at and you're like, oh, this is a knockoff, which I don't think it's a knockoff. I think it's more an homage that pushed it at that one moment, you know?
So, okay.
Yeah, that's kind of, and that's my two cents about this volume. And I definitely, this series, definitely one of my favorite newer series that I've been reading for a while. So definitely worth anyone that is a fan of these types of comedies. It's definitely worth your time to check out. And so, all right. Well, what's your take on it?
I would say that Volume 2 is like introducing the meat of the series. Well, not the meat, but like started introducing me. The Volume 1 was how it was, shows us what it has in store for us. This one is showing us what it is that was in store for us. And Gary, I would say this is a good way for the reader to decide that they will continue or not. I will continue because it's not trying too hard to be something that it wants to be, at the same time being its own thing with, you know, the facial expressions. I like that. It's not unique. I mean, every anime manga has facial expressions, but with Mitsuko, it's done well in a very comedic way that it doesn't feel like it's forced. It's just ridiculously funny.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely agree.
But the bit about the whole, you know, the last few chapters of the reveal of the character, I was like, yeah, that's gotta be a guy. Pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Physique and all.
Yeah, definitely. It is kind of the weird thing where you're just like, good gosh, how common is it for people to get confused about someone's gender in Japan that it keeps popping up in manga?
Androgynous.
I guess, but I don't know. Yeah, the other day, yesterday I was hanging out with some friends and we were kind of talking about, how it was like, you know, making jokes about cross-dressing. And at the time I was kind of saying, you know what, I bet I could, it was like, you know, I could show up to this, like, event, dress in a dress, just see how people react, and then try to pull it off as if I'm a bearded lady. Then my friend was like, no, it wouldn't work. Your bone structure and physique is completely wrong. It's too manly. And I was like, that is the nicest thing anyone has said to me in a long time. So, yeah, I know for myself that I am too manly to be mistaken as a girl.
The world has been spared of seeing Derek dressed as a woman.
I never said that. I just said I wouldn't be able to pass off as a woman, even if I pretended to be a bearded woman.
Spared of that, too, as well.
Just you wait. One of these days. But, yeah, so that was Nisekoi Volume 2, and not the longest discussion, but then again, it's always more fun for you all to read the manga than to actually hear us talk about it, which...
The discussion did bring up something, though, about how you said the similarities, and I was like, you know, there are many manga with similarities from other things, and the question is, how far is too similar?
Yeah.
Point where you feel like, oh, this is, they're really ripping off from this, like that certain manga that clearly ripped off from Bleach, another series that was published here in the United States.
Oh, yeah. Well, that...
Of America. Yeah,
well, the problem was that he was flat-out tracing copyrighted material. Mm. Well, with this, it's portraying a scene that is similar to a scene in another copyrighted material, but it can come across more as an homage than ripping it off, because it's not like Naoshi Komi traced the pages from Ranma 1/2. He just drew it himself. It just happened to be that the events that happened in it were the similar to those in Ranma 1/2. So
plus they had a pool. Wait, they had a pool outside, but they also have a pool inside. What the heck?
What the hell? Yeah, you're right.
What the heck? They have a pool inside the building. They have a pool outside the building.
What kind of ritzy school is this? Well, do keep in mind that the kids of these ultra-rich mafia and yakuza families are going here, so it's probably a really nice school. But let me actually, you know what? I need to check something quickly.
We are so good. We have two pools, one in the building, one outside the building. Why? Yeah. If they can't swim outside and it's raining, they should swim inside. I mean, if it's not raining and it's hot, they can swim outside. Okay, then why do you have two pools? We have too many kids, that's why. Plus, well, the teachers want to use the pool inside. They'll use the inside they want to.
Yeah, it doesn't mention if the pool that they're at inside is like somewhere else, so for all intents and purposes, we can assume that it's...
It's probably a public pool then.
No, I'm thinking it's with the... It's in the same school. So, but let's take a look at... Let's see when they. Yeah, when they're. And then when they. Let's see, they're practicing. Oh, yeah, when they're in the competition, it's still inside. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I guess they really have a good swim team because both of those pools look pretty darn sizable, I must say. So
it's a good thing we have a second pool, or we would have had a horrible worse than a lawsuit.
Yeah,
who's able to tell
like
us?
This scene would have ended a lot worse, but yeah, I can totally believe that this is just straight up a really, really, really ritzy school. Because I mean, keep in mind, and this is getting a little into spoilers. If you aren't one to listen to our weekly chapter commentaries, which seems kind of odd, but okay. If you remember Ruri's grandpa's house,
mm-hmm.
place is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Methinks Ruri is also from a pretty well-to-do family. Mm-hmm. And there was that Kosaki chapter where it talks about her, you know, her and Raku getting into the same school. It might have mentioned whether it was a really nice school then, but she seems kind of the odd one out since her family owns a business, but it doesn't seem like it'd be this massively successful business to the point that they'd be able to send both of their daughters to a really ritzy school. But nonetheless, until proven otherwise, I'm just going to assume this is a very nice school and that wasn't an error. Maybe.
I'm so glad I pointed out, because when I was like, wait, when you mentioned the pool thing, you wouldn't shove out the pool. I was like, wait, second.
Yeah, that was actually the first time I've heard fishy. You. Yeah, that was actually the first time I've heard you notice something that I completely glossed over. Well done. Yes, you get a cookie.
Give me the cookie now.
Yeah, well, it's in your kitchen. Maybe. Do you guys buy cookies?
We do buy cookies.
Go get your cookie.
I don't want to buy a cookie. You buy me the cookie.
Never. I was like, I bought you Dark Souls. That's a cookie.
I can't play it. I can't eat it.
Well, then pretend you have diabetes.
No.
There you go. Metaphor confused.
Get me Demon Souls if you can too. Then.
What? Isn't that one older?
It's the spirit. It was the first one before Dark Souls.
Oh, okay. Right.
Dark Souls is a spiritual successor.
Is that one?
Yeah.
Is that one even available anywhere?
No, it's only available on the PS3, sadly.
Ooh. Well, guess what. Yeah. I could buy you the game, but guess what? You'd have to spend way more money to get it.
Buy me the game.
Yeah, well. Anyway, I think that about wraps it up for our manga commentary for this week. Good week. Next week, we will be talking about, just because of the way our schedules have worked out, we are going to be talking about a single volume of manga, namely the recently released Genshiken Second Season Volume 4. And then after that, we are currently debating on whether we will be talking about Ranma 1/2 or the next three volumes of One Piece, which we really need to get back into our One Piece reviews.
Let's see, one omnibus of Ranma 1/2, which is 2 volumes, or 3 volumes of One Piece, which is generally one omnibus of a weekly series. Wait, was Ranma 1/2 a weekly series or a monthly series? It's only 2 omnibus.
I don't know. Well, it's 2 volumes. The omnibus isn't as thick as the omnibuses of certain of, you know, the Shonen Jump series are.
How long is each chapter after chapter 2? Because after one and two, the chapters are still
one
a little
sec. Bit. One sec. Let's see, 59 to 79, okay, let's see, part one is like 30 pages, part two is 35 to 59, not quite as long, it's like 24 pages, but then part three is 20, and then part four is 20, then 20. 20. Yeah, it does seem like it's a weekly series. Was a weekly series.
Old weekly series, since this is before, you know, all the stuff that happened, all the technology.
Yeah, well, yes, definitely indeed. So, yeah. So, we'll probably also have a new volume of Fairy Tail to talk about at some time then. I think I just got volume 35. When's the next one? Jeez, Fairy Tail, why you come out so often? Let's see.
Because it comes out when we least expect it, even though it comes out a month every time.
Yeah, well, Fairy Tail 36. All right, when does it come out? That one comes out. Sorry, I'm just loading the page here. Very slowly.
Elevator music playing now. I lied, there's no elevator music.
Amazon, you are failing me. Why is it so hard to load? Crap.
Elevator music, best thing to play during an apocalypse. Not really. I never heard that tune.
There it goes, freaking loading. What the crap?
Amazon was trolling you.
Okay, March 25th. I think I pre-ordered that one. Let me check my pre-orders. Let's see, pretty sure I pre-ordered that one. Let's see. Of course, it makes me log in. All right, yeah, because I'm pretty sure that one's like coming out on the. Oh well, I think that comes out this Tuesday. So hey, there's another. Yep, pre-ordered. Comes out on Tuesday. So hey, guess what? We got something to talk about after that week. So, yeah. So that's what our current schedule is looking like. Genshiken, second season, volume 4, next week. Week after that, most certainly the newest Fairy Tail, plus either Ranma or One Piece.
We'll go with Ranma. I would like to read volume one of Ranma.
Volumes 1 and 2,
Volume
dude.
one and two. I actually only read volume three, so when we get to Omnibus two, I'll be like, I read volume three before.
Yeah, that's.
It will muse at this.
Yeah, well, it's pretty episodic, so that'll still work. Let's see, I need to put these volumes away. I'm a little
That's the
behind
thing.
on. Yeah, I'm a
That's
little.
the thing I like about weekly series. They're episodic, and that's why I feel like Fairy Tail One Piece could, well, One Piece is fine, but Fairy Tail could try to be episodic
Yeah,
more
man,
often.
I'm like 3 volumes behind on my
So many
written reviews for Fairy
characters. Can't you
Tail.
be episodic and
It would be
all of them?
nice. It would be nice, but we'll talk about that a little more as we get into volume 36. Actually, let me
Like a lot
remind
to read.
myself. Let's see, the end of 30.
Oh,
Oh,
lots, man.
yeah, the end of 35 was when they took that break, and so we're slowly getting into the part where crazy stuff happens. And also worth pointing out, the Fairy Tail anime will be coming back in April, meaning I have a crap ton of episodes to catch up on. Oh boy. All right. Well, anyway, yeah, I'm gonna put these away. Let's see. Yeah, I'm just gonna put these volumes on the shelf because what I'm probably gonna end up doing, because yeah, I started doing written reviews of Fairy Tail for mangabookshelf.com, and then I did one volume. Went 3 volumes without doing anything because I got crazy busy. So I'm gonna pick it up with volume 36 again, and then I'm gonna have all these other volumes that are reviews that are on my own website. So, anyway, it's time for us to stop this segment and move on to the next one.
Transition.
Yes. It's time for the manga commentary section. For this week, whichever week it is, I've kind of.
The week of St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, that week. Oof. I've
Six,
completely lost my sense of time and
17. Oops,
everything.
17. Sorry, 17.
There you go.
I
All
guess.
right, well, starting off this week, we start off good, sort of, with chapter 741, Usoland the Liar.
I like that play on the chapter introduced Norman.
Yeah. Yeah, this. Okay, so last week I was kind of pissed at Usopp. This week it turns out that we were treated to several pages of Usopp running away from, not getting very far somehow, but running away from the officers, Trouble and Sugar. And the entire time that he's running away, he's hearing the Tontadas are like, oh, it's like he's a hero, or, and all the, and just, all stuff them saying is like, oh, he's great, and Trouble, yeah, and Trouble saying, oh, no, he sucks. And then Usopp's like, oh, just find a way to escape, guys, good luck. And it was really hard reading the first couple pages of this,
Yeah.
Because it just cemented the whole scumminess of him running away like that. I mean, it's a little easier for me to digest it having decided that, okay, it must be because, you know, the fact that he's running away has a lot to do with the fact that Robin is no longer, you know, in his memory. So he doesn't know that he's leaving a friend behind. Yeah. As far as he's concerned, these are just these random guys that he met. But still, it is really hard. And I think the worst part of it is that, predictably, he comes back after, you know, hearing Trouble torture the Tontadas so much. And it, you know, it was kind of the only way that he could get out of this without being a complete scumbag. But at the same time, it doesn't feel like... It feels out of place for where the story is right now, you know? Mm. Like, dude, you did this 10 years ago. You know, with Usopp running away, pretending to have been beaten by the, was it Chu from the Fish Arlong Pirates?
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's like he kind of did, and then he changed his mind because he's like, oh, that's the changing my mind and making my stand. That's the right thing to do. And it's just sort of like, you'd think that he wouldn't have to do this again, you know, by this point in the story. But I mean, I guess if you go along in terms of he hasn't specifically made his stand, you know, a proper, his final stand basically yet. But at the same time, it just feels like shoddy writing, really, because...
What about when he was Sogeking?
Well, yeah, I mean, he still acted like a coward then, but he still made his stand then. So you'd think after 2 years of nonstop fighting would have been enough to make him not a coward, you know? Mm. And so the fact that we have to reiterate this whole tired cliche of, I'm running away, oh, they said something that made me realize that I should not run away, so I'm coming back. It feels beneath Oda, really, you know? It feels like something he really shouldn't be doing, just because it's so tired and cliche by now that it really takes me out of the story. But I do like the way Usopp yells at the Tontadas, telling them who he really is, that he did lie to them. But then immediately he's like, you know what? I lied to you, but I'm about to become your legendary hero anyway. Which I thought that was kind of cool.
Damn, I'm a pirate. I'm not a hero, but damn, I'm gonna become your legendary.
Yeah, but yeah, I like that where they're all. It was like, you're a pirate, but you're still a hero, right? It's like, no, a pirate is a pirate, and it seems like he's the third person in the series to emphasize that. You've got Luffy and Zoro that have emphasized it before, with Luffy saying, "Listen, a hero is someone that would give away his meat to someone in need. A pirate is someone that would eat the meat for themselves. I want to eat the meat." and then I think it was Zoro not too long after that who said the exact same thing, except with booze. And then everyone's like, just shut up. So, yeah, I like seeing that Usopp is going to, you know, actually be fighting here, because, you know, he's the only one that could fight against Sugar, since he's the only one that fights at a distance.
You shoot that damn grape into her mouth.
Yeah, right? Except I think they... Did she... I think she did something to it. Or squashed it or something. I don't know. That wasn't this chapter, so I can't really say. Oh, well.
Oh, yeah, well, the death grip was funny, though.
Was, yeah.
Or something.
Oh yeah, that was like, what the crap?
I'm loving.
How would you? Say
that? Yeah, that's.
I think that, yeah, that works. Like,
that's probably the sound. He was trying to make. I couldn't get it right. I guess I'm trying to get the syllables all in one go.
Yeah.
Yeah, waiting the color spread.
Oh yeah, there was a color spread. I completely forgot about that. I liked it. This isn't the first time that Oda's gone for a military theme. But compared to the other one that he's done, there's a lot. there's a lot more obvious fan service in it, I must say.
Wait.
You know, with Nami.
Oh, all right, man.
You know, it was like But it's kind of weird.
She's not wearing a bikini top. It doesn't count.
Well, she's not wearing pants either.
Oh,
neither is Robin, for that matter, who, if you cover her legs, she looks kind of like a proper, like she's wearing a proper uniform, but then you look down and it's like, oh.
Right.
Yeah, but it's kind of funny. It's like he has Robin and Nami in these, like, silly, kind of sexy poses, but then at the same time, they're all in the background. And so you're like, wait, are you trying to objectify them with those poses, but then why are you hiding them behind everyone else? This makes no sense, but oh well. Probably for the better overall. But yeah, I liked it. It's a good color spread. I don't know. Who doesn't like military hardware?
I have to admit, seeing Brooke wear that handkerchief covering the lower jaw, like,
Well, let's move on. We've got a flashback to talk about. We get to see Kuros's design as a human finally. Well, his design as a 15-year-old
human.
where I guess Toy Soldier starts thinking about his past and how he met King Riku, and you know he was a complete thug and he was fighting in the Colosseum. Everyone hated him, but he was able to defeat them pretty handily. And he won. He keeps winning and winning, and after a while, people start, you know, he keeps getting in trouble, so he has to fight more battles to win his own freedom. And then you kind of get to a point where, towards the end, all the people in the Colosseum actually kind of love him because he keeps winning. And it's kind of interesting seeing that this was sort of the deal in Dressrosa when they were supposed to be like this idyllic kingdom of peace. And yet their way to, like their justice system seems to be exactly the same as Doflamingo, which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's, still, you got him, so he's 15, and then he's in the Colosseum for...
About 4 years.
Does it say 4 years? I don't know, I just
keep... It says 4th year in the Colosseum. Up to a point, it says 4th year in the Colosseum.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because I keep seeing 4 months later, 4 months later.
Wait, what?
Oh, no, wait, where was it? Let's see, Quarter Colosseum. Okay, he's 15 on the first page, and then after that...
4 months later.
4 months later, yeah. Star Combatant, 200 victories, 300 victories. Yeah, I'm not seeing any... Oh, there we go, yeah, right at the end, so... Okay, yeah, so you've got... The first main part, you've got, like, him in the Colosseum immediately, then 4 months later, everyone still hates him, then fourth year in the Colosseum. Okay, so he's 19 by that point. Mm-hmm. And so, and he's, you know, people are actually love him now because it was his 1,000th victory. And then we end the chapter with Kuros in front of a grave, but we don't know whose it is, and he is... You know, he's sad because he just wishes everyone would forget about him because no matter where he goes, he'll be a murderous beast. And I kind of like to imagine sort of like what happens immediately after that is just King Riku is like, you know what would make you feel better? Marrying my daughter. He's like, sir? He's like, no, really, here, let's go over to my place, we'll have some ice cream, and then you can marry my daughter. He's like, wait, what? Like, I'm a convicted criminal. I'm not sure why he was like, oh, shut up, I want grandchildren. What? What's going on here?
Sounds like my mom.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways.
Yeah, well, hopefully she doesn't have you marry a convicted felon.
No, she wouldn't want that either. Anyways, the grave he was sitting in front of might be his friend because few pages before, if he said it was a group of them and they killed my friend, that's why I killed him.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking that, but I was thinking, I don't know, maybe it's his parents' graves that he's in front of, because there seems to be two graves focused on with other graves in the back, and keep in mind that if it's a graveyard, not everyone that's buried there is related to you when you go visit a grave. So it could be the focus is just on those two graves, which maybe, I'm not sure. I guess we'll find out next time. Or maybe it's some people.
We'll find out the week after next week because there's no One Piece next week.
Boo! In the meanwhile, I'll write a fan fiction in between chapter. And it will be all about King Riku trying to hook up Kuros with his daughter.
Yeah, do that because. One shot. We'll read it. No, seriously, we'll read it. Do it. Now.
Yeah, oh, no, that's a good idea. Yes, listeners, do that.
Hey, you do it. You're the one that brought the idea up.
What? No. Well, whatever. Well, hopefully people have forgotten about this by then. But anyway. All right, Naruto, chapter 668, the start of a crimson spring.
I like this chapter.
I like this chapter a lot. Mostly because it focused on Guy and his dad, who is just as awesome. Yeah, Dai.
My guy, I'm like, wait a second here.
Yeah, and I think this was the first chapter that we get confirmation that Guy can't use ninjutsu or genjutsu or anything but taijutsu. Because, I mean, he's always had a focus on taijutsu, but I don't recall it ever specifically being said he's incapable of using them. It's usually always saying Rock Lee is the only one that can't, you know, he's the only one that is incapable of using them, of using it. Yeah. But it never said whether Guy was incapable or if it was just that was his preference. Also, I just want to point out, after seeing Guy's dad and looking at Rock Lee, I'm starting to think, methinks there's someone is related here. Because, dude, those eyebrows. They all have the same darn eyebrows. The only difference between Rock Lee and Might Guy is that his eyes are shaped differently. But that's it. But I'm starting to think as like, dude's a cousin or something.
His eyebrows are still thick even before he changes hair to be like Mike, to be like Guy.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, I'm just kind of thinking, you know what? I'm pretty sure that these guys are related. And when you consider the fact that they're from the same village, which is still a sizable village, but, you know, ninja clans, families all interbreeding and all that. You kind of probably get this sense that that there are some ninjas that are connected to each other, and so my fan theory is that Lee is like a distant cousin or something of Guy's, or I don't know. Maybe it turns out that he was actually his father or something, because we never met Lee's parents. But yeah, Lee has always been one of my favorite characters, so by extension, seeing Guy be a badass like this is really awesome, and also seeing his past, sort of, you know, it actually brings up a good point with the whole, how do we still take ourselves seriously while at the same time we're, you know, ridiculously optimistic about everything, which I thought was something that, you know, it really is relevant. Because a lot of times you have like these flashbacks where like, oh, here's this topic, but it's not actually important. Well, this one, it's, you know, it actually is kind of important. So
it was amazing to learn that Guy's dad was a Ganon. I'm like,
Yeah.
I was like, wait, what's the? I saw the parents like, what's that get up? I'm like, oh, he's a Ganon.
Yeah, he doesn't get a vest. Yeah, a vest because he's still a Ganon. He never even made Chunin. But then it turns out that at the end, he takes on the Seven Swordsmen of the Mist and uses...
All seven of them.
Yeah, and he unlocks the eighth gate after having told Guy never to unlock it because it's highly suggested that you do that and you will die.
You use it when you want to protect those who you really care about. Bingo.
Yeah, and you're going to die. And it looks like Guy opens the eighth gate and it sets him on fire. I would love it if it turns out that wasn't actually part of the technique. He's just like, oh shit, I'm on fire. And his eyebrows are on fire. And yeah, this was a really badass chapter. Yeah, but you know, I am a little worried because I'm afraid this is going to go the final battle against Aizen arc route with how in Bleach. They were throwing everyone through their most powerful techniques at Aizen, but it was no good. And I would really be furious if that's how Naruto ended, because we've already had the entire war arc, which quite frankly was not that interesting, and to top it off with possibly one of the worst ways to write a climax would kind of just be rubbing salt into the wound, I'd say.
As long as Guy can do some sort of, can do a permanent damage that even Madara cannot heal, that Naruto and Sasuke take advantage of, right? Because we know those are going to fight against him together.
That would be good.
I would be able to deal with that.
Yeah, that would definitely be good, because that was one of the main problems with the fight against Aizen, was that everything they did absolutely no damage. It was completely pointless. So I could live with having people throw themselves at Madara and all be defeated if it means that Madara is weakened. I mean, I know that one of the reasons why you wouldn't want to do that is because, you want to show the hero at their strongest, be able to beat the villain at their strongest, and having the villain be whittled down bit by bit would be kind of not great.
Well, I know video games aren't like that, but generally, it'd be more realistic to do it that way, because what the heck,
man? And it would also be good for a series that emphasizes, bonds and friendship and family and all that, to have a bunch of people throw their power at the main villain and do a bit of damage, and they each throw themselves at him, and bit by bit they do enough damage that to the enemy is at a point where they can be taken on by the main character, who basically just finishes him off. But, I don't recall them ever doing that, really. But, still kind of get to the point where where he's still way, way powerful, that only the main character could take him, even in that state. It took, if any of their other friends were left and they tried to fight him, they still would not be strong enough to take him on, but the hero is the only one strong enough to take him on in that weakened form still, which that could work for me, I think.
Because I remember people saying, I remember my friends saying that people hated Sayo because Sayo always come in at the last minute and beat the boss of the arc after all his friends had weakened him. he basically killed Sayo.
Well, yeah, I can kind of see that becoming.
Kubo was a fan of Saint Seiya, so
I can kind of see that becoming a problem. Yeah, but at the same time, I don't want a repeat of what Kubo did with the climax of Aizen.
Nobody wants that. And seems Kishimoto not even remembering. Yeah. That was like 2 years ago, three years.
Oh, you wish. I think it was longer than that. No, but the thing is that it would still be okay if Guy throws himself at Madara, managed to damage him, but doesn't defeat him, or do at least any significant damage. I could live with that as long as he's the only one that does that. I mean, these other guys have kind of thrown their best their abilities at him, but they're not at their strongest, while Guy seems to be more or less still at his peak right now. So as long as we only have one of those, that one I'd be fine with. But if it's like a constant stream of, and now Tsunade has come and we'll throw her best at him, and it's like, oh look, it's the Raikage is throwing his best at him.
Look, more father.
Yeah, it's like, it's like, oh look, it's father. That ninja daimyo guy. I was like, what the hell?
Yeah. Oh god, that's horrible. But yeah. If I recall, Conan tried to throw her best at Madara before Madara,
But that was years ago.
And he managed to recover himself.
Yeah.
It was at Tobi before he revealed himself to be Obi-Wan, but yeah.
Right, yeah, that, well, true, yeah, but that I can deal with because, one, it wasn't the same guy they were fighting. Two, it wasn't part of a stream of, now it's my turn, now it's my turn, now it's my turn, and on and on, and so. Yeah.
That's why Bleach sucks.
Yep. Anyway, it's time for us to talk about Stealth Symphony Chapter 4.
Okay, I actually like this chapter. It took a while, but
there
actually,
we go. Yeah. Well, I mean, liking a series within four chapters isn't terrible. I mean, if you were reading it all at once, it wouldn't take you too long to get here. But yeah, it's kind of this is the chapter where we finally get a focus on the company. I forget the name, but yeah. It has some
something.
Yeah, it has some funny moments that kind of like with, you know, Troma trying to be, I was like, oh, hey, I'm the, you know, I am all, I was like, oh, I'm all carefree and whatnot. And it was like, oh, yeah, you know, I don't know why they have the top 10. They should just have the top 5. Their artificial intelligence system that runs the building says, that was because you were sulking when you dropped from 5th place. And so it's kind of nice seeing that he's, you know, he's not the best. So it's not like it's a, oh, this is our Natsu character for this series where he's not the best, but yeah, you know he's the best, actually. And so he still has much further to go. But still, overall, yeah, we get a little explanation of, well, you know, all the different species that come together to the city after the dragons went to the moon.
They intermingle with each other, but after they go home, they hang of their own kind. Yeah,
that's pretty much. Yeah, which, you know, you kind of get the sense of that. And you have all these different kinds that they're, you know, dwarves and elves and goblins and lizard men, the sirens and harpies. There's like no mention of humans, and I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, we're not special enough. Yeah.
We made you guys.
No, yeah, that is kind of one of those things where like fantasy is like, you can't read fantasy if you're gonna get offended by the fact that every other species except humans are special. If that bugs you, you may have a problem. It's like you're gonna have a hard time. But yeah. And yeah, so Goblin Guy, he's the
President,
and he says, hey, look at these. Let me show you an example of one of the dragon devices. And here, this is a ranky summoning device, and it will summon 100 magical beasts that I can control. It's like, actually, no, you can't. It's a low rank item, so it doesn't have the power to control them. And then the president gets eaten. Everyone else goes after and kind of uses it as a chance to just show off how easily they defeat the beasts. And then the president makes the beast that he's inside run away. I'm like, wait, why are you doing that?
Yeah.
And everyone's like, okay, let's hunt the bastard down. And they go after him, and it's kind of all silly and whatnot, and it's a very fairy tale kind of vibe, you know, with the guild kind of structure, basically. But, yeah, you get a... Yeah, 4 chapters in, we get introduced... To the actual set of main characters, I guess, which is kind of odd that it would take this long for that to happen, you know? Because normally, by like other series standards, this would have been chapter 2.
Fairy Tail did that, man. Mm-hmm. Fairy Tail did that.
Yeah. Yeah, there are going to be some clear references to Fairy Tail every once in a while, just because it's kind of the one that pops to mind first when I think of simple, you know, basic, oh, hey, look, this is a typical thingy.
And then when we talk about Fairy Tail, it ends up being One Piece, and then One Piece, Dragon Ball, you know, just go all
and
the
And then
way.
Dragon Ball, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. No, wait, the timing's off on that.
The timing's off.
No, but, yeah, so, yeah, I have to agree with you. This chapter was a bit more enjoyable than the other ones, so I can see why you'd enjoy this more and not enjoy the others, but,
Because it didn't focus on Jig.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, it is, he does kind of feel like a, pretty much, like an, you know, like he's unimportant to the series, but this focuses a little bit more on him, which is good, because he's the main character, and I'm kind of tired of those series where they show, hey, here's the main character. No, wait, lol, he's just there to introduce you to the actual main character. Kind of like, you know, how you started, again, Fairy Tail out, and it was like, hey, look, here's Lucy. She's the main character. Lol, no, here's Natsu.
Well, Natsu was the first one to appear, right?
Yeah.
But you still, until then.
Yeah, true. But you still, in. But with that, we got lucky in that it didn't completely lose focus of Lucy. There have been some series, but I can't remember off the top of my head that have done that. So, oh well. All right, it's time to talk about Toriko, chapter 270.
The Final Key.
Yep. Also known as, hey, this first page is pretty decent for Monsum fetishists out there. As he is just sitting there in his tub. And I just like that. It's like,
in my tub.
Yeah. He's like, why are you acting so fancy? You think you're hot stuff now? And they basically go back to Biotope 1? Or was it 0?
It was probably one.
Okay, yeah, and they go to the, well, they go to the place where they get the, pardon
yeah,
me. Oh, yeah, it was Biotope 1, yeah. They go to the place, they go there and they where they got the egg from, and they just try to get into the house there. That they try to go up the stair, break it open, doesn't work. They go up the stairs, the upstairs and downstairs are all there. They've got... It's like you've got Coco discovering pervy mags, and you're like, oh, geez, what the crap? It's like more dirty mags. Oh, and cookbooks.
Cookbooks.
And they found out that there's nobody on the first two floors, but there's a basement, so they try getting into the basement, but, you know, they're unable to break it. But Sunny discovers that there's a, some stairs down the well, so they go down the well, and there's a hot tub, and I love this scene where they're just like, hey, let's take a dip, and it's like, that's not what we're here for. It's not that panel of just Torko and Komatsu are just already naked and starting to climb in there, and they're just like, and they don't even say anything about it. It's just afterwards everyone's back to normal, and yeah, they keep trying to find ways to get into that one last compartment, the ground floor, but they can't get in. And then they just, Komatsu realizes, hey, the window opens.
They're like, what the dog?
And they discover that there's an old Nitro that's just laying there. And it's like, oh, he's in hibernation. And it's like, he's like, I'm awake. And it turns out that they just knocked him out because of all the attacks that they were throwing at him. But
oh, that's what happened.
Yeah, it turns out, yeah, they wonder, who are you? And he's like, you really haven't heard of me? He's like, I'm Chi-Chi the Flavor Hermit, Ichiru's partner. And everyone's like, what? He's like, actually, that part about being partners was a lie. What?
But his name is Chi-Chi.
That is kind of amusing. You can just see Toriyama. I was like, hey, what are you doing? But yeah, so this was, we knew what was waiting for them was Nitro. But I did not expect that he would start talking.
I didn't think he was such a talker.
Yeah, he was one heck of a talker. But yeah, you just kind of, yeah. This is a really big moment because this shows that Nitro were actually intelligent. I mean, we know it's been said they're very intelligent, but they never spoke before, so you never really got the sense of these are actual characters or people. Kind of thing. It was more a sense of, oh, these are these hyper-intelligent monsters, kind of like, you know, Velociraptors in Jurassic Park.
Wait, they were intelligent?
Well, intelligent-er. You know, that was kind of the whole point, was that the raptors were not human-level intelligent, but they were smarter than the other dinosaurs, so they could, I'm smarter than your average T-Rex. No, but...
Oh, that explains why.
Yeah, you know, they were able to open doors and stuff like that. You know, that was what made them so dangerous, was they were smart. And so that's kind of the same vibe I was getting with the Nitro, where they're these monstrous, beastly things that are also intelligent, but they don't speak ever. So I was thinking we're meant to think of them as just these monsters the whole time. But turns out that they're actually, you know, they're not just smart, but they're actually not only intelligent, they're also sentient. So we find out that, and they can actually be, basically, yeah, they can be actual people. You know, not just these super intelligent monsters. Basically, as I was saying, I wasn't expecting them to be able to speak human. So that is pretty fascinating. But now, after knowing that, that the Toriko world is our world, but with like an alien, possibly an alien parasite on it, I'm starting to think, okay, but the Nitros were said to be these ancient creatures, but that wouldn't make sense if it's our world. We were there before them. So what if the Nitro are actually arrived with whatever it is that made the Earth larger, and they're actually aliens? And so, yeah, I kind of like, yeah.
I thought maybe they're birds that evolved in, the dinosaurs that evolved in a different way.
I guess that would work too. They do kind of have that same look. But, yeah, I don't think that's how that would work. But I don't know. I'm sticking with my alien theory. Aliens.
Wait, dinosaurs evolved into birds, and birds have somehow managed to evolve into humans-ish.
Yeah, which I could kind of buy that, but I like my alien theory.
Yeah, you like aliens.
But yeah. But, yeah, so, like I was saying, this is a big twist, and this changes a lot. All right, well, next week, Torkoal's going to be off, unfortunately, and...
Oh, wow, so it's two series that we like reading will be off for next
week. I know.
I guess they found, hey, these two, they work hard, and they're kind of, you know, they're kind of close to each other, too, Oda and Shinbukuro.
Yeah, let them go have a family vacation or something. I don't know. Yeah. All right. Yep. All right. It's time to talk about Seraph of the End, Chapter 13.
He actually likes this chapter.
Shut up. No, I don't, man. It was just one time. I was only experimenting. It's like, I don't like this. I don't like crappy manga. I'm not a crappy manga actual.
What?
I was making a gay joke.
Oh.
But nonetheless. Anyway, I do kind of like the color page here. It's really good use of color and light. I like it. It's well done. But yeah, so the chapter itself was very interesting because you've got Mikaela or Mika or whatever who's going on about how you can't trust the humans. And everything is like, they're using you, and then we're like, oh, that's just him talking, because he's been brainwashed by the vampires. But then you ends up, something happens inside him that has nothing to do with the demon in him, and it turns out that, well, he kind of starts going crazy once he sees the vampires going after his friends, which, yeah, would bug me too, because the way vampires... you know, go after you is in a kind of very intimate way, which wouldn't normally look like violence, but rather looks like something else. Which is kind of disturbing.
We don't want to mention.
Yeah, so you see...
The way the vampires attack is going to look like, I was like, this is so not right.
Yeah, it's like you'll have, like, two of the characters are pinned to the ground with vampires on top of them from front and from back, and you're sort of like, oh dear.
Two of them are actually being bitten on the neck.
Yeah. But still, you just kind of have to think, it's like, oh my, is it any coincidence that it's the girl that's on her back with a vampire on top of her, and it's the guy that's on his stomach with a vampire on top of him? Is there any kind of imagery we're meant to take from this? I wonder what it could possibly be. But, yeah. Nonetheless,
vampires are...
Yeah, well, they are kind of a... Vampires are kind of one massive rape metaphor, so I'm not surprised by this art. That's actually kind of appropriate.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, but then it turns out that, yeah, you ends up going crazy or something. Something happens to his eye where it starts bleeding. I guess it's like a stigmata kind of deal. And he's in his world, and the demon's like, no, I'm not doing anything, but this is kind of a problem. And it's like, you know, it's like, who thought that a demon would be scared of how monstrous the human I'm possessing could be?
And worse than demons.
Yeah, and there's like, the sky is cloudy, but a pillar of light shines down from it, and a kind of goofy-looking angel with a horn comes down. But then it turns out, and then he spouts a giant wing, and what's his face? The leader.
Crap. Which one? Crowley?
No, not him.
Oh, he's just Gurren?
Gurren, yeah. He's like, it's begun. And you're like, oh, you douchebag. And it turns out, yes, they did something to him, and it would appear, well, for one, it makes him insanely more powerful. But for second, it would appear that he seems to be possessed by an angel, it would seem, because the only thing he's saying is, like, sinners. Sinners must die, must kill all sinners. And he goes after, what's her face?
Kinoa,
yeah. And sort of like, it's funny the way he goes after her first. I'm like, well, yeah, after her talk about how chastity is an old-fashioned ideal and junk, I'm kind of not surprised she's the first one he goes after. I think I might say, you brought it upon yourself, dear. No, but still, so I guess angels are a thing now, which I kind of like that because, you know, you had demons, but they were, you know, and, but every time you have demons, you never have angels. And I'm just thinking that, look, people,
yeah,
two sides of the coin.
You, oh, what the heck?
Man. Yeah. It's like you can't have demons and not have angels. But it looks like this one has angels, but they're kind of extremist, I guess you could say. Which I'm going to flat out say that does not fit my own personal opinion on the topic of angels. I guess you can kind of get the whole idea, but I guess what they're going for is this whole, oh, they are good, but they are so good that any amount, tiny amount of evil will kill, will is worth killing someone over, which I can kind of see that, unless it's supposed to be this whole humans took the power of an angel and corrupted it, made it like infused a fallen angel with a human kind of deal. I could kind of see that. Especially since it's like the one, oh, son of a bitch. The yeah. One winged angel. Please, someone.
I know. That's why I didn't want to say anything.
Someone from, who makes Final Fantasy again?
Square Enix.
Yeah, someone from Square Enix, go and slap these people, please. But.
This isn't something new, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but still.
6-winged angel, 1 million-winged angel.
Well, yeah, to be fair, the 6-winged angel is kind of trademark early Christians, so.
Christians trademark this. Where is our copyright?
Like, we've copyrighted this and we want the money, which we will then give to charity because that's how we roll. No, but, yeah, 6 wings, 8 wings, stuff like that. I don't know, it'd be kind of interesting to see.
Infinite wings, just keep rolling every friggin' minute. That like, oh my god, too many wings.
That'd be kind of pimp. But yeah, I kind of like, I'm pretty sure that it's going to be a sort of like a fallen angel kind of thing, just because that, you know, essentially in angel mythology or whatever the word for that is, the number of wigs determines the number of, you know, the level of power. So an angel with just one wing, one, isn't all that powerful. And two, would definitely connotate the that it is in a fallen state.
Yeah, because they can't fly.
Well, I don't think they actually need the wings to fly. They're just meant to be symbolic representations of their power, essentially. Okay. But yeah, nonetheless.
Yeah, so the most page of all this chapter wasn't that for me. It was when Mika picked up Yujiro like
like a princess.
Like a princess. I was like, what the heck am I reading?
Yeah.
Like before that, was it Crowley or Feodor? One of them said, "Oh, we want to save Yuichiro," like how something saved princess.
Yeah. Well, carry on. But
it was just I was like, no, it's the weirdest thing ever.
Yeah, and I have to say, this chapter actually did make me feel tense. In that I was like, oh, what's going to happen to the characters? But then again, I am kind of easily influenced by rape imagery, which was very heavy-handed this chapter, so...
Little vampires.
Yeah, which normally I would be pissed, but this is kind of the deal with vampires, so it works. It feels appropriate. It's not like it's, oh, hey, we're just going to show rape imagery because sexy. It's like, you people are sick. No, but yeah, it works. But I also like this whole idea of you've got Michaela who's all, oh, look, you can't trust the humans. And I'm like, you're the ones keeping them as food, so I don't think we should listen to you. But then it turns out that he's actually right. The humans did something to him, and it's pretty messed up. And then we find out that, oh, hey, look, he's about to kill Shinoa. And I'm caught between thinking, oh, no, and... Do it.
I'm actually on the old no side, of course.
Yeah, you do kind of feel bad for her for a bit, but then I remember all the stupid jokes she makes, and I'm like, kill the bitch, kill her.
Yeah, just watch her get a pass, and that kind of reveals her actual character. And say, oh,
and then she reveals that she too has an angel inside of her. Or, oh jeez, I just thought of a song from Doctor Who. Carry on.
okay, next chapter. This is a good chapter.
Yes. Yeah, this was a good chapter. It, I mean, let it never be said that we are completely biased and will never say anything good about series that we hate. We've repeatedly hated on this one, but this was a good chapter. We've repeatedly hated on Naruto, but this was also a good chapter.
Yeah.
We fillet One Piece so often that sometimes I have to remind myself, oh wait, this was not a good week, and I will call Oda on his BS whenever he does something that is not as stellar as it was.
I hope nobody knows what that word means.
There's no way they don't. But anyway, but still, nonetheless, I have to say, with One Piece, it's like, okay, yes, this was not good, but at the same time, there's an undertone of, well, yeah, but we know he'll do better later, and he's done so well in the past. He's done so much more good than bad that you can forgive him after calling him out on the bad crap. But anyway, Nisekoi, chapter 114.
Megan.
Indeed. And,
this chapter.
Yeah. I don't know. I was a little, I mean, it doesn't flat out say it, but it does kind of have Ruri of this. So I was like, oh. So she's like, oh, so this is why Kosaki likes him. I guess I can understand a bit. It's like, please, don't make her a member of the harem. That would just ruin her character for me.
Well.
Yeah, and they kind of do... And they kind of drops hints here and there, because it's like when she goes to wake him up, she doesn't have her glasses on. He's like, whoa. It's like, you're really stunning when you let your hair down and don't have your glasses on. He's like, you should do that more often. And she slaps him because he's like, save it for Kosaki, you jerk. And I'm like, yeah, stop that, you jerk. No, but also there's the part of me where it's like, what? No, taking glasses off makes someone more beautiful. Bullshit. He's like, I'll have you know I wear glasses all the time and I am gorgeous.
Stop doing that, Rui.
No, but yeah. Anyway. So, yeah, the chapter is just basically Rui deciding that, you know what? He's really old, so it's not surprising that he's about to die. So I'll just do whatever he wants to do today.
So he plays Smash Bros. With him. I mean,
they go fishing. And you know, they go out, go catch cicadas, go have a picnic.
The montage of stuff.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. They go swimming and just have fun, but Ruri at the same time is kind of a little, oh, but I'm, you know, I don't, he's like, you know, I still feel, you know, it was really fun, but, you know, she's like, oh, is there anything else I can do for him kind of deal. After she throws buckets at him and Shu because they're staring on her in the bath, which is sort of like, that is kind of weird. You're starting to cross the line into the pervy old grandpa territory, and I'd rather you not. But I can still kind of spin it in the direction of, he's looking at it because like, oh, how she's grown, in kind of that inappropriate way grandparents can kind of get sometimes. Because, you know, the whole, oh, my grandchild is a sexual being is the furthest from their mind, so...
Yes, and let's not forget, even grandmothers can do this.
Yeah, it is true, but, you know, that's kind of like the whole idea, mindset is, oh, of course they won't, you know, mind if I walk in on them while they're not wearing anything, because why would they? I don't think it's like, it doesn't even register on them that is like, oh, this is a person that may not want people walking in on them naked, because we're family, and... stuff, but you know, so it's not like, you know, meant to be perverted, I don't think. And I think Shu staring on her, either it means that he actually does have a crush on her and he was just messing with Raku when he said, oh, I have a crush on the teacher. Yeah, that's right. I think it's more just him messing with her. There is what that's supposed to be. But yeah, and then as you said, they play Smash Brothers, which was fun.
I love that reference. I'm like, wait. And then I turned the page and I was like, wait, that's like Meta Knight.
Yeah. And it is, and I do like the sort of the explanation for why he wanted to meet her boyfriend, because he's like, you know, I'm probably not going to get to see your wedding. And, you know, I'll be able to rest easy knowing you've found love and everything's okay, because, you know, sometimes you're a little too smart for your own good. And then she feels kind of guilt, you know. She feels kind of guilty because, like, oh, wait, this, you know, he's not actually my boyfriend. Maybe I should tell the truth. But, and then he's like, or, you know, that Ichijo kid, he's all right. You could marry him tomorrow, as far as I'm concerned. And she's like hell I could. And then I kind of like that line. It's like, what would Kosaki say? Like, yeah, that would kind of break her, I think. If her best friend suddenly was like, oh, hey, yeah, I married the guy you're in love with. That would be kind of scummy.
Not to mention, we already had to deal with Haru, you know.
Oh, yeah, that. Yeah, I would be like...
That's why I'm just like, no, don't do this.
Yeah, I would... Yeah, my reaction... Yeah, my... If that is what happened, I'd be like, Onodera, okay, one, you need a new sister, and two, you need a new best friend, because yours are kind of jerks.
And three, make a damn move.
That too, yeah. That would solve everyone's problems.
Oh, so what about the gang war? Then, you know, the gang war is their problem.
Yeah, forget that. Yeah, whatever, that's their own problem. Let us run away.
Haku doesn't even want to lead them.
Yeah. I don't know, but yeah, so... And then we end the chapter with Ruri basically saying, oh, hey, I know what I can do for my great-grandfather.
Stage a fake wedding?
I think that would go against her concerns of, I don't want him to die believing a lie.
But, right.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he'd probably be happy enough that she's been able to find a lot of good friends. I'm kind of, I wonder if that's what will happen next chapter, where she invites Onodera and Chitoge and Tsugumi and Marika and the others to come down. And she says, oh, by the way, Raku isn't my boyfriend, but hey, look, I found so many friends. Now you can die resting happy. And then he doesn't die. Then he'll proceed to live another 50 years. I'm pretty sure it's not going to end with him actually dying, you know? That would be completely against the tone of the series. But anyway, shall we talk about World Trigger?
Yeah.
Chapter 52. yeah, speaking of... with Seraph of the End, speaking of sexual imagery... It's not in World Trigger, but somehow, I just can't see that first two-page spread without thinking, well, she's fucked.
What?
Because there are three giant rabbits there, and Kitora is kind of screwed.
Yes, you got one? Oh, right. Oh.
She is. She's like... It took me one leg to defeat one of the rabbits. I still have three limbs left. But that doesn't work because it turns they all have different abilities. As one of them shoots spikes from the ground, captures her and condenses her and, captures and condenses her into Trion, basically. Which suddenly my reaction to that was like, no! Not the best character.
We just had a good interview talking a bit about her. What the heck?
Well, I'm sure there's... it's not like it's like, oh, she's dead. Because keep in mind, that's not actually her body.
I know.
So what I think is happening is that they're able to... By compressing the Trion, they're able to basically capture her mind as well. Sort of like her spirit or her essence or, the thing, her intelligence, I guess. Have it captured and compressed in there. Or maybe it just turns out later that all the people that were captured wake up later on in their regular bodies and it's just they have no more Trion anymore, which would be kind of terrible. But I think it's probably going to be this is going to turn into a rescue arc, which I'm thinking rescue arcs work if you actually care about the character they're going after. So I'm sort of like,
So wait,
I would say it's justified.
So wait. Well, how would that justify for Bleach?
Well, at the time I cared about Rukia, sort of, except not that much, but it was still well done enough. And with the Orihime one, even though that it's kind of weird, it's like with the Rukia one, for me it was, I don't really care about Rukia, but this is a good arc. With Orihime it was, I care about Orihime. And so I'm invested in this, but this really isn't a great arc. So
yeah. It's kind of weird, but
with Kitora, it would go the route of, yeah, I'm interested. I want to see her get rescued. So, yeah, but then we have them all kind of try to fight, and what's-her-face, the other sniper girl, kind of doesn't do any good. But then Chika has a sort of internal moment where it's like, thinking about, everyone's like, oh, you need to run, because she's frozen, thinking of her... Kitora, her brother, her friend. And then she has the moment where it's like, I would take a stand, and she picks up the sniper rifle and blasts open the armor of the one kidnapping her friend, whose name I don't remember.
I don't remember either.
Yeah, but then that gives Mikumo a chance to actually kill one. So it's like, oh, hey, speaking of guys that come in and kill steel, if you're justified. Yeah, but then we end the chapter with, you know, HQ telling them, hey, we got Kitora's report. We're sending Border's most powerful squad your way. And then we get to see the, what's their actual squad
name?
The
Three Mentors.
Well, yeah, the three, what's the actual squad name?
Goes by Jin's last name, I guess? I'm not sure.
I don't know, but yeah, anyway, those guys. There's like the airhead, the scruffy hottie, and the cool hottie, basically. Yeah, and they're charging in, and what's their face again? Konami.
Isn't it Tamakoma squad?
That's it, Tamakoma. Yes. Yes, I remember it. It's been a while, but yeah, Konami saying like, "Why are we so late?" It's like, "We had to pick you up from school." And then they basically like, "Okay, the plan is the same as usual. Konami goes on a rampage, and we provide backup." And so, yeah, we end the chapter in the best freak yeah way possible, with the hopes that Kitora will be rescued and not we won't have to go after her, hopefully.
What about the other guy that got captured?
What other guy?
I don't know. It's such an S.
The one that was earlier. Well, they got his Tryon back is the thing.
Oh, okay.
So they just need to figure out how to get him out of it, I guess. So hopefully that's what they'll do with Kitora.
Hope so.
But yeah, all right, it's time for All You Need Is Kill, chapter. Damn it, Obata!
Dang it, what this is? It's censored.
It's like, what are you doing? What chapter is it? Where's the chapter name?
Number 8.
Seriously, where's censored. The chapter title?
It's all black. It's covered by black.
I don't see it. Oh, there it is. Chapter 8. Okay, so we get Rita's backstory. And to sum it up quickly, she lived in Illinois. Her dad used to be in the army, I guess. And they're talking about, the neighbors, the mimics couldn't possibly come here in this small town. Then the mimics come to this small town. And they kill everyone. And Rita's dad locks her in, like, the hurricane vault thingy. Yeah, and find out that her mom is grievously injured. And Rita's dad is kind of a badass because he hits them with cars, manages to actually avoid them for a bit, and kills two of them by making them shoot themselves. But then he is injured and he gets shot himself again. And I kind of like the way the art works, the art is done here, because, you know, you can still tell it's Obata's style, but at the same time, he manages to subtly make the characters actually look like they're a different race than the Asian characters that he's drawn. Because normally a lot of, like, say for Bakuman, there was a lot of, oh, hey, we have different hair colors. Like, oh, yeah. Dang it. Why did I forget his name?
Which one?
Not Mashiro.
Takagi?
Takagi, that's it. I was like, it was a something. I was like,
Akito.
Tagami? But yeah, you know how he had blonde hair, but at the same, and normally with most anime and manga, it's like, the blonde ones are the Americans. But now they're giving Japanese characters the blonde hair, and I'm like, great, now I don't know who's who anymore. But with this one, it just, I guess the last page with her dad, you know, right as he's about to be killed, where he's like, I want you to live, it really kind of emphasizes this whole sense that, yeah, this dude is not Japanese. And it's done very subtly. Well, it doesn't look, you know, it's like his eyes aren't, like, you know, massively bigger than the eyes of any of the Japanese characters. They're pretty much the same size, maybe not as narrow. But you still just get it from his design, you get this general sense of this is a Caucasian. You know, which is usually so hard for manga to do. But this just goes to show how good Obata actually is, in that he makes his characters look like the race they actually are. And not like, they all look the same except for the ones we tell you aren't. Yeah. And I think maybe it's a little bit the nose or something. It's just
It's the nose for me. But yeah, the mother definitely looks like Rita looks similar to her mother generally.
Yeah. Although with Rita's design, probably because she's so much younger there, she kind of looks like a character that could be Japanese in this setting. She doesn't have as much of a design that sets her apart from the from the characters that are actually meant to be Japanese. But we find out that her name is not actually Rita, it's Black Bar.
We'll call her Black Bar from now on.
Yeah. But yeah, she stole the identity of a female the passport of a female refugee from next door and headed for the, who was 3 years older, so she was able to join the United Defense Force. And that that explains why everyone's like, Rita Vertrosky, that doesn't sound like a very American name. Because, I mean, on the one hand, you do still have people in America that had Russian ancestors or, Eastern European ancestors, so that name would work. But it just seems like a name where that doesn't sound like a name that anyone that has lived in the U.S. for a while would give their kid. And now it turns out we were right. And then it mentions that 6 months after entering the forest, she experienced her first time loop. And so we're going to get more history about what's going on there. So, yeah, it was a good chapter. I wasn't expecting to get her backstory. So
I wasn't expecting the chapter title to be like that. It's like Black Bar.
Like, yeah, it's like Chapter 8. Redacted. What?
Redacted.
Yep. All right, it's time to talk about Bleach, Chapter 572. Thank you, Kubo.
The Blaster.
Yeah, Master Blaster. No, but yeah, Yachiro beats him, and even though he's like, you can't defeat me. And then it turns out that he's actually a product of the imagination of this other kid, who turns out anything he imagines is true, and he's sitting inside the barrier with the two wounded captains, but he's already killed them. And then Isana looks at them and she confirms it. They are dead. And it's like, whoa, that's kind of hardcore for Bleach. And Yachiro tries to fight him, but it doesn't work because it turns out he has the power of imagination. Imagine me doing the thing with my hands and a rainbow that says imagination in it. And yeah, so he imagines that Yachiro's bone her army is made of cookie. And I'm like, wait, what? And then it cracks. And then it's like, obviously, you must think, my other bones are made of cookie. And then they all break.
Because it's like Inception.
Yeah, pretty much he put that idea in her head. And then she's like, I have been defeated because he can imagine anything.
You're probably thinking, my arm might be like a worm, so my other arm might be like a worm. Well, now it is.
Like, actually, what I'm thinking is that I have the body of an adult. Please. It's like, I am 500 years old, damn it. The only thing that's changed is my haircut. Or however old she actually is. It's a lot older than she looks. Mm. But, yeah. And then it turns out that Kenpachi is back. Yay. So, actually, yeah, really yay. I mean, we're expecting it to happen eventually, and Yachiro had her moment of being a badass, so now it's time for Kenpachi to come in, because I can just imagine him as like, your bones are now cookies, and he's like, no, they aren't, I'm not that imaginative, and he's like, damn it!
I can't imagine anything except your head exploding.
Yeah. It's like, I can't imagine anything except your head split from your body. So, yeah, we're going to get a Kenpachi fight, and that's badass. But, yeah. And this was a great chapter just because I like that power. The dude is so totally OP. But at the same time, you're thinking, dude, this could be a totally awesome fight. With however it happens, it will probably be the same Kenpachi just powers his way through. Or this might be when we finally get to see what Kenpachi's Shikai release is. Just watch.
Just Shikai.
Yeah, just as Shikai. Just watch. It's going to turn out to be like some kind of flower or fairy themed release or something like that. Something fruity. Where he'll be like, it's not that I couldn't release my Shikai, it's that I didn't want to.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, I could see that. Okay, and that does it for the chapters in Weekly Shonen Jump Online. So, okay, what we are going to have to do is we're going to have to take a quick break here. And we will have to come back and record the rest of the chapters later. And by which I mean the other Shonen Jump ones that aren't in Shonen Jump Online and the Kodansha chapters, or the Crunchyroll chapters. So, because I need to run to work. So, yeah. Oh no, I've broken the illusion.
Why did you do that?
We don't record in the same sitting? What? It was like after 5-hour-long podcast episodes. It's like, no, we really don't do this all at once. But
we tried doing that before. It nearly killed us.
Yeah, we used to, but yeah. Anyway, so we're going to take a quick break, but... I'm probably not even going to bother putting in a bump or anything here. You'll just hear us continue our discussion. So we will see you all in now. Okay, we're back. It is time for us to finish up this week's chapters by discussing what remains of the Jump chapters and then going over the Kodansha chapters. So starting off with...
Assassination Classroom, Chapter 81.
All right, tell us, Mo, what exactly happens in this one?
Okay, so, Karasuma decides to teach them how to free run.
Mm-hmm.
And free running, and then parkour is mentioned here.
Right.
From what I just read on the internet. Mm-hmm. Free running is considered like doing all these really cool tricks while trying to just get from one point to another. Parkour is more on speed, going from point A to point B without being all fancy and stuff. And I think what he was trying to teach them was parkour, but as I read, ends up them just being all doing these nice tricks and stuff, free running. And I'm like, okay, but that's still good though. And then he asked one of the students like, oh, how fast can you get there? From here to there, and he's like, oh, I can do it 1 minute, and then he does it, and he's like, 10 seconds. Then?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And of course, the thing.
Yes. Yeah, basically what...
They play a game of Cops and Robbers. Of course, then, oh, let's play a game of Cops and Robbers.
Yeah.
And use your skills that you just learned in, like, 5 minutes. Just learn about 5 minutes, didn't even get the chance to try it out much yet.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah, it is basic. And then the rest of the chapter is everyone saying, ah, oh, yeah, we can do this. Sure, Karasuma sensei is, you know, he's a professional and everything, but no worries. There's no way he can catch us all. And then he proceeds to catch them all.
Because his wallet's on the line.
Yep. Yeah, pretty much.
Basically, the stakes are this. If the students win, Karasuma has to use his wallet, his money, that he's already had to use in the previous chapter, to pay off to buy cake for them. But if they lose, they get double the homework.
Yeah. So everyone's pretty heavily motivated here. And mm-hmm. Karasuma, of course, does not want to, you know, I'm pretty sure that as a government employee, he does not have enough money to buy cake for them all.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so he proceeds to... do his absolute very best to catch them all. And I think one of the funniest scenes is where I guess Irina is involved in the game as well. And so she's hiding and her plan is to just sort of like lure him to a secluded place and then seduce him. And of course that doesn't work because as she's planning, he comes up behind her and I don't know why he dumps her head into the pool of water that she was next to, but he does, and it's hilarious.
I think it's because he's like, hey, my wall's on the line.
It was, yeah, this was
and
a...
Then, yeah, and then there was another part where after the first batch of students were captured, and then one of them was calling the other saying, hey, we're being led over, and the other's like, wait, what do you mean? He might be behind you, like, upside down, like, the scariest match ever.
Yeah, he does not play around this time, which... It was a lot of fun. I love this. It was a... Just in general, that's kind of basically all that happens in this chapter. But there's also... We should mention that Koro-sensei is going to be involved in the competition, but he is going to be out of the game, just sort of guarding the jail where all the caught people are put up until the last, like, what, 10 seconds or so? Last minute. Okay, yeah. And so
this should be 10 seconds.
Yeah. Everyone's just like, oh, we need to find some way to win before that. But yeah. There's kind of like, yeah, there's no way they're going to win this. But yeah.
And then one of them is like, "Oh, we can still win if we still it's caused from wrong. We can just go back and tag our teammates out, right?" And it's like
No, that's not going to work.
Yeah, Koro-sensei said he wouldn't move out until the last minute. He didn't say he would not move in around the circle.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. But yeah, overall, it was a good chapter. I liked it a lot.
I like the mention of free running and parkour and Hunter using it.
Yeah, that was nice. And it was kind of, you know, I kind of like the chapters where Karasuma shows off his skills more, because a lot of times he kind of seems like not really a joke, but it seems like he's more there to be a joke in how, you know, serious he is and everything. So seeing that he actually has a reason to that he can actually back up his attitude most of the time is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And yeah, but okay, let's move on to Shokugeki no Soma chapter
61.
Excellent. This is the one where they go to the cooking school, right?
Yep.
All right, yeah, that'd be confusing. It's like, they go to the cooking school, right? It's like, yes, they do. Every chapter. It's like, no, the cooking school for children. Which, there was a moment where it had all the kids eating the food, and right before we get to see their reactions, I was like, no, don't you dare. Do not dare. You should have them react in the same way that everyone else in the series reacts to food. I will murder you if you do that. Fortunately, that didn't happen. It was mostly just, hey, these kids are no good at having a hard time cooking, and the teacher's injured, so you two go ahead and teach them now while I take care of another class that's for, like, housewives.
It was funny with the part where one of the kids was trying to draw something, whatever, and then someone just suddenly makes, like, stuff out of carrots, and then he makes this Gundam out of carrots and other stuff.
Yeah, that was really fun, and it was kind of just, you know, them just showing the kids how to cook, showing off a bit and everything, and so it was cute and a fun chapter. And they had the sort of, you know, the typical stuff, like the one kid that acts all cool but actually is having a hard time actually learning how to cook, so she just acts cool and tries to avoid having to cook because she doesn't want to, you know, fail. So that was fun. I liked that.
I like that all.
Yeah, and then at the end, it looks like Megumi is going to be part of the potential list of romantic interests for our main character here.
I'm all for it.
Yeah, which that I was like, oh, well, we were kind of expecting that to happen.
It's like 40s. What was it, 40, 50 something chapter, I guess?
Yeah, for that to happen.
That's good.
Yeah, which I think that works out pretty well, even though it kind of early on, it sort of more or less hints that Irina is probably going to be one of them, even though she's, you know, well, because they're constantly arguing and everything, and I personally find that the most entertaining. Hmm. So, yeah, but overall, it was a good chapter. I liked it.
I liked it.
Indeed. Yes. Okay, should we move on to the Kodansha chapters?
Oh, yes.
Yes, starting with Fairy Tail, chapter 375, which is
Madness.
Yeah, the majority of it is Natsu and so on fighting against a dude who has souls, and I kind of like, where he reveals that, oh, he has captured Hades' soul, and then he's like, God, you know how powerful he is, and then Natsu is like, I already beat him. He's like, huh? That was kind of funny. But then the fight, of course, continues, and it's not so easy. But, yeah, it's mostly just like a fight. The guy's mixing the magics, his own magic and everything, and Natsu uses the lightning, fire, dragon magic again. And He manages to absorb. I guess he calls it the soul, but he manages. But Natsu is still alive, so I guess it's more he absorbs magic power because it looks like he has Natsu's power at the end.
That's true. He absorbed the celestial spirits because they were spirits, so he ended up having them in him, but then.
And we get a, and we kind of get some scenes of the others fighting, and kind of get to see that. Yeah, they're all kind of having a hard time there, and
And
then
then it was mentioned that each demon is capable of taking on the entire country's army. I'm like, yep.
they're in trouble. And then it loose, and Wendy manages to find where Face is hidden, except we get a cliffhanger where one of the demons is there waiting for her.
He's
So,
like, I see you. I'm like,
yeah.
no.
Yeah, so it looks like Wendy's gonna get a good get a fight. But yeah, I don't really think there's not much to say about this chapter just because it was kind of straightforward. It was just hey, here's a fight. Cool. You know?
No, to be honest, when Nonsense said, oh, yeah, I beat him before, I'm like, you did not beat him. Everyone else helped you beat him.
Well, yeah. But nonetheless, it was still kind of a cool line.
Yeah.
Which that go is kind of how all of Mashima's writing goes, I feel.
Cases like that will scare me. I'm like, oh my goodness, no.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to Seven Deadly Sins, chapter 70.
The Chief Polyknight of Hellfire.
Yep. Where? Yeah. So Galder saves Gwila, and then he uses start, tries to use his magic, but dang it,
Dreyfus.
Dreyfus. That's it. Tries. Yeah.
Just obliteration, like, yeah.
He's like, "Oh, I have defeated you," and oh, look, there's a giant hole in you, and then. Of course, that does absolutely no good as Galder punches him in the chest, leaving a dent in his armor. It looks, yeah, a huge dent in his armor. And then he uses his magic, and we get a flashback of for Dreyfus when he was younger. And you get a, you know, we kind of get to see what the kingdom was like before the Holy Knights coup. And you kind of, you get these sort of moments here and there where you can see that this is clearly not exactly how things happened. There's hints of, oh, this is a, you know, this is very much a an illusion or a dream, because, like, you know, people will be saying, you know, you'll have like characters in the background saying things that he Dreyfus may not have said at the time, but he was what ended up happening or will happen. And also, I just want to point out, I really like the designs for the outfits of Dreyfus and Hendrickson. They look very medieval, you know, like not, you know, this is fantasy medieval, more, but more actual. These are medieval knights, and this is the, these are the clothes that they would wear. And yeah, and I know we already knew this, but this kind of reminded me. We get to see Grimoire as when he was a kid, as you know. His father as Dreyfus's son, and we also find out, and you also hear that oh, his uncle Zoratras, who is the you know, the chief holy knight, and he's
former chief holy knight, we
yeah,
know.
well, at the time of this these events here, is the chief holy knight, but he was, and he's also the Gil Thunder's father, which I'm pretty sure was mentioned, but at the same time, you find out that and you're remi- and it was this everything that was said here was mentioned before, but this kind of reminded me of it because I'd forgotten. But yeah, Dreyfus and Zoratras were brothers, so yeah, Grimoire and Gil Thunder are cousins, in fact, which I don't think was ever really mentioned. But
Didn't.
yeah, you well, I mean, you could have probably figured it out by association, but nonetheless, you also have you have a bit of a scene with Meliodas and Hendrickson and Dreyfus, and all kind of, you know, talking. Meliodas is saying, is like, oh, yeah, you know, we're, you know, I think you're better than your brother, Dreyfus, but, you know, it's like when it comes to just swordship, but, you know, you're lacking experience and ambition. And it's really weird because you see Meliodas is like eating a bunch of mini little hawks. And they even have one of them that he's eating is going
What?
like, ow, ow, ow. And yeah, and then you then things go into nightmare mode as we see Zoratras, Dreyfus's brother, completely skewered by spears. And just a little bit crucified there.
A little bit.
Yeah, and it just breaks Dreyfus's mind, basically, and he's just collapses, saying he never wanted this to happen. It's like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry. And then we get to see Gowther, who is, yeah, basically making him relive this, and this is all his doing, and this is why they were saying his magic was so dangerous, which I thought this was a brilliant chapter, because, yeah, not only does it give us the flashback, but at the same time, it's also the flashback is, you know, actively happening in the story. It's not, let's pause the story, here's the flashback, okay, let's continue the story. It's actively part of the story, namely, hey, this is Gowther's attack upon him. It just happens that his mental attack on him is revealing information that we as readers needed. And I thought that's an absolutely brilliant way of doing that. And so, yeah, I loved it. It was quite good.
I liked that at the very end. I was like, whoa. Whoa, man,
yeah.
Whoa.
He was just like, whoa, Gowther, you
suck. It's like, physical power? Please, we don't need physical power all the time.
Yeah, pretty much. It is nice just showing how everyone's like, he's the most powerful and the most dangerous, and it's like, yeah, man, there's a good reason why. He's kind of broken the most dangerous character that was there, that he had to fight there, so, it was something.
Hendrickson.
Yep. Well, yeah, still Hendrickson, but do we honestly believe, well, he might have a way to protect himself against Gowther, but still.
He is the one that's made all these other, the younger holy knights into, like, the
True. All right. I think it's time for us to finally talk about Okitenemeru again.
Okitenemeru.
Yes. Chapter four. What do they call it? Episode. Yeesh.
Chapter four. It's like, yeah.
It's a little bit late, but it seemed like it was kind of short because you have, what's his face?
I like the cover, Catherine.
Pervert, but yes. Yeah, but we have, what's his face? The dude with the special power that lets him see.
Kanata.
Yeah.
I actually remember his name.
We've only had four chapters of this. But yeah, he basically uses it, but then somebody notices, and he's like, oh, he's infected because he's completely covered in sweat, and then he gets the crap beaten out of him. And taken away, and his friend's like, no, that's not what... You know, that's not what happened. This is, you know, that's just the side effect of his power, but, yeah. And then you kind of cut to him being interrogated by one of the researchers, and that was about it. So not much to go off of, but I guess it was okay. I mean, it was kind of an interesting twist, I find, that to take the ability, the power, special power that he has, and then make that something that causes people to be afraid of him. I mean, that happens in other places, but this was kind of an interesting way in that it's not like, I have a demon fox in me, and this makes me dangerous if I ever lose control. No, this is just literally, no, there's nothing dangerous about him. He just sees far. It just looks like he's dangerous, so it's all based on a misunderstanding, which I thought was fun. Right. And, okay, did you have anything to say, or did you want to move on to the special fairy tale chapter?
Sadly, it was a short chapter, but it was nice to see something going on.
Yeah, that we actually got to see it again.
Yes. That kick.
Yeah.
It, like, kicks him, like, you have to kick him, you know?
Yeah, that was low. I was like, tackle dude. Yeah, I was like, dude, what the crap?
He could have tackled him. Like, hey, you didn't need to tackle him. Well, something had to happen.
Yeah. Well, I think it's time to talk about the fairy tale side story, 413 Days.
Oh, yeah.
Featuring Juvia. It's like here in magazine special, we have Juvia and Gray's secret story. You've never seen Gray make this face before. It's like, ooh,
I didn't see
promising.
Gray at all in there.
Yeah, it's like on the cover. It's like, no, there's no Gray, but there is, yeah.
That's Gray's face entirely, I guess.
Yes, there's, a lot of skin. That's totally Gray. No, but, yeah. So, we start off with Juvia in her room in the Fairy Hills dorm, Fairy Tales dorm, Fairy Hills, and she's taking a shower. And I think this is the first time we've gotten this massive fan service of her on this scale. You know, it's like you've had the typical cleavage and stuff, but I think this is the first time she's had her own shower scene, basically. So, but yeah, he kind of basically goes through and you find out exactly how obsessed with Grace she is. She has a soap, or it may not be soap. I think it might be the Lufra or something shaped like Grace.
Yeah, Lufra, that's what it's called.
Yeah, and she's using the Grace-shaped Lufra, and the dialogue is kind of concerning because it's like, ah, Grace-sama, you know every nook and cranny of Juvia's body, while she is rubbing it all over her chest. And then you see a shot of her butt where it says, ah, even there. And I'm like, Mashima, I think you need to get laid. And if you are getting laid, it's clearly not enough. Stop this. This is ridiculous. And
I think he realized, I don't need to get laid. This works for me.
Or I guess he's like, well, this sells. So I'm like, I'd like to argue that, but I can't. But yeah, you kind of, and then from there you get her, you get to see the rest of her room where everything is, has gray on it. And it was kind of creepy. I don't know if that's what he was going for, but it was kind of creepy.
Not if devoted or obsessed.
Yeah, I call this obsessed, not devoted. No. Yeah, but yeah, and then it turns out that this is the 413th day anniversary of Juvia and Gray Sama's first meeting. And Urza's like, oh, it's a happy day, hmm? Yeah, I kind of like, Wendy there is like, Urza-san is so grown up, and Charlotte's like, oblivious is more like it. And yeah, and then Juvia decides, I should give him a gift because Urza suggested. And then she goes to the guild because she was working all day making the gift that she's holding behind her back. And then she keeps seeing a bunch of different pairs in fairy tale in very questionable sort of positions, like, for example, Natsu with his arm around Lucy's neck, like, leaning real close to her, and she's saying, wait, stop it, Natsu, not here, not now, to which he says, come on, I have needs. Juvia just bug eyes at them, and she's like, what? And just rubs her eyes, and then it turns out, no, that is not what it looked like. Then she looks over, and she sees Gajio and Levi making out. But then it turns out that not only are they not making out, they are sitting on opposite sides of the table. And Juvia's like, oh, good. He's like, oh, great. It's like, I'm delusional.
He's a definition of her shipping goggles on. It's full steam.
I'm kind of surprised that Mashima didn't take more advantage of this to show off, like, some other pairings. Like, I totally would have thought it would have been funny if she had of just started walking out, gone to a... and seen, like, Elfman and Evergreen randomly making out in, like, this hidden corner of Fairy Tale. And she rubs her eyes, looks, and they're still there doing the exact same thing. And she's like, oh, well, moving on then. Yep. And she, of course, tries to give Gray the scarf. And, you know, he turns her down. And he's like, I'm an ice wizard. The cold doesn't never bothered me anyway.
Oh, boy. Moving on. No, we're not bringing that song up anymore, okay?
Too late, but yeah. And, yeah, Gray, of course, blows her off because he is, you know, and he's acting basically like a jerk, but you can kind of understand why. And then from there, you have Juvia, who is sitting by the side of the river all sad, and she found out that because Leon showed up randomly and told her that it was the day of Ur's death. It was the anniversary of her death. And Urza comforts Juvia, basically. And then from there, Gray goes on, and he's thinking, he remembers how Ur gave him a scarf when he was cold. And he turns around, goes looking, it started snowing, he goes looking in the snow, and finally finds the scarf that he'd left behind there and puts it on. And he's walking home, he's like, yeah, this thing's pretty warm. And he's got a bit of a smile there on him, and then Urza sees him with a scarf, and she smiles, and it's touching, in a way. And then Juvia tries to apologize for the other day, and Gray's like, nah, I was out of it, sorry. And she tries to give him a hug pillow with her on it. And if this is not something that is actually sold, I will be surprised, massively surprised. And of course, Gray says he does not need that. But
because why would you need that when you have the real thing?
Yeah, I don't think that's what he's thinking right there, but
I know.
So it was... Yeah, this was one heck of a chapter, I have to say. It was weird, because at first it was all, oh, it's, you know, it's all kind of creepy, but then at the same time, you do feel bad for her, you know, after Gray turns her down, even though you kind of feel that he's a little bit justified because she is a bit obsessive. But then the fact that it ends kind of in a touching way was a bit surprising, I thought, you know, because I didn't think that was going to be the way Mashima went with it. But I guess what he's going for is the, hey, I had him turn her down in that one chapter just to make things, just to stretch things out a little bit. And so, I don't know, so, but it's kind of weird, but at the same time, I liked this chapter a lot. If you ignore the fan service at the beginning, I think pretty much any fan of Fairy Tail could really enjoy this, even the ones that dislike the fan service. And it's kind of weird. I've been enjoying these extra chapters just where just random nothing is happening more than the actual story. So I'm kind of thinking, hey, Mashima, rather than going on with the story forever and ever, maybe you should just have a couple chapters after this current arc that are just basically this. Just the characters doing random stuff and going about with their lives. That might actually be more interesting, I think.
Like Nitoko has been doing sometimes. They do one-off chapters and stuff.
Yeah. Which...
Why can't series like One Piece and Naruto and whatever just do those, you know?
Well, One Piece, I don't think it would really work, but there it has interesting stories. True. It would be nice to have like a couple more chapters like that, but I kind of feel that Mashima, who doesn't have like a major ongoing destination for his story, could stand to do like a couple weeks of just random character-based stories, you know, just small things, kind of just like these extra chapters, just sort of slice of life kind of things or stories that are focused on the characters themselves. I think that would be a lot more interesting overall. But yeah. Anyway, I think that does it. That's all the manga we have to discuss this week, isn't it?
That is? Wow.
It is. Yep. We are done. And it is time to wrap things up.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. I'm stopping the recording.
Oh, okay. So, Ajin, they have about up to chapter 1, 2, and 3 so far.
Okay. Is it something we should read?
I actually want to check out. I want to at least give a damn about the African settings for once. Why is it so hard to write a story with the African setting? Like, oh, yeah.
Mm. All right, fair enough. This has been Manga Cubed, episode 89 for the week of March 17th, 2014. Next week, we will have our 90th episode, and then it will just be 10 more weeks until our 100th episode. Wow.
Mm.
Such episodes.
Mm.
Much not edited. Wow.
You must edit them. Edit them.
Yeah, this is an open call for anyone that listens that feels like being our editor. Please do.
He doesn't want to edit, and I can't.
I'm bad at editing. I put it off. It's the hardest part of doing a podcast, and I put it off. So it would be good to get someone else that can, one, do the work for me, two, that can do it better than me. That would be appreciated.
But that was pretty good.
But I don't know, I'm sure there's a lot of other tips and tricks that I could pull off to make it actually sound good. But
watch videos of people editing.
I could, but that would require effort, and you know.
That's how I learned to play League of Legends, and then I forgot how to play it again. Now I'm like, I suck.
There's a world of difference between learning how to play a video game and editing stuff. Yeah, but
and there's also a world of how to learn electronics.
Yes, you should probably do that sometime.
What I'm doing.
Do it harder. No, but yes, joking. Yeah, you probably know more about it than I do. I'd say no, you definitely know more about it than I do. But let's wrap up this episode, shall we?
Sure.
Okay. As usual, starting with the author comments. One Piece's Eiichiro Oda, I saw Kosanji Yanagiya do a Rakugo. Traditional comic storytelling performance. It was the first time I laughed so hard at a performance of Sokotsu Nagaya, the role of careless people. He's a master.
This guy really goes out a lot, man. Every week. When he's
yeah, that is. I have kind of been noticing that a lot more of his comments are about the stuff that he went out and did, which I think is really good because for a long time it didn't sound like he was doing much of anything besides his manga. So it's nice to know that he can take it easy every once in a while, because I know for a fact that even though I love manga and I love writing, I would go crazy if I had a manga artist schedule. Speaking of,
anybody would. I would. Yeah, I would probably try to do like Mashima.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, dude,
like, what's with this guy's story? It makes no sense. And then another guy would be saying, hey, don't worry, he's just having fun. He's not making any sense here.
Yeah, but, yeah, or it's like, oh, I remember there was like an issue of Jump that had his, had like the Masashi Kishimoto schedule in it, but I can't find it anymore. I looked through all my issues, but I can't bloody well find it. Oh, well, I'll look at that as we continue. Mo, talk about Naruto.
Naruto of Masashi Kishimoto. My cat has its own room, but still likes to sleep in the cardboard box. Does your cat have its own room, but likes to sleep in the cardboard box, Derek?
No, I did not give it a bed because it does not need one.
I thought you were going to say he doesn't deserve one.
Well, I was about to say that, but no, it literally is. He does not need it. You want to know why? Because he will sleep, he keeps sleeping different places. If I got him a bed, it would be a waste of space and money. So he just
give him a box.
Yeah, he just sleeps on my bed or on top of my box of books. He just sleeps wherever he wants. So
that's cats for you. I do what I want. Okay.
Pretty much, yeah. Dumb cat. But anyway, I love my cat. Don't take it the wrong way. But anyway, Stealth Symphonies, Ryogo Narita. Listened to the opening thing of the Hozuki no Reitetsu anime while the first week's deadline was approaching. It was truly an enjoyable hell.
Hozuki no Reitetsu, is that a series that
sounds familiar?
Person did?
I don't think so.
Because it seems like you're saying it's an enjoyable hell or something.
Mm. It's been a while. I don't recall who did that one, but
no, it's written and illustrated by Natsumi Eguchi. Nah, it's not.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, in that case, let us carry on with
Toriko's Mitsutoshi Shimabukuro. The new photocopier arrived at my studio. It's great to have a useful machine that has a lot of functions.
Cool. Hopefully, it's also a printer.
He's getting new stuff. He's like, I gotta replace my old stuff that's falling apart.
Yeah, definitely hope it's a printer as well, because the photocopier also doubles as a printer. So no reason not to have them be the same, really.
What are you using the photocopier for anyway?
Making copies of the pages after the screen tones have been pasted on and everything.
Good point.
But, yeah. All right, Nisako is Naoshikomi. That helpless feeling you get when there's no turning back. You really feel it when you order takeout food for delivery and end up with something you don't like.
I hate that.
Yeah. Kind of like how I hate ordering drive-thru from one of the Wendy's in my place, because they always get it wrong. Either the cashier writes it in wrong, or the person putting the food together ignores what the cashier wrote. It's like, look, I said a double, not a single, you bastards trying to steal my money.
Do they even get it wrong?
I know.
It's like, I want a double cheeseburger. Get a single cheeseburger. Dude, I said double. I mentioned two cheeses in the burger.
No, two patties, not two cheeses. But, you know, that just kind of at least that goes to show that the food is freshly made. Because, you know, it takes forever to come, which, you know, again, freshly made, as opposed to McDonald's, where they make the food and then they have it waiting there for anyone to get it. So
yeah, that's why sometimes the food doesn't taste right. I'm like, why is it not greasy? Because when it's greasy, I know it's just ready. But when it's not greasy, I'm like, no one should want to eat this. Yeah. I've heard In-N-Out is just great, but In-N-Out has such freaking long lines. I mean, drive-through is one thing. Waiting in line is actually a lot better.
Yeah.
Trust me, it is.
Yes. All right. Let's see. Who do we have next?
World Trigger's Daisuke Ashihara. World Trigger Bonchi Age rice cakes are now on sale in Japan. Didn't this guy talk about rice crackers before? Sorry, rice crackers.
Somebody did.
It was him. They're delicious. Enjoy them with your family and friends. Oh no, was it him or was it someone else?
I don't know.
I think it was him.
I want to say that it was actually Naoshi that was doing that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But all right, Bleaches, Tite Kubo. My assistants are really enjoying a coffee maker I recently won at a New Year's party. It's great.
You won at a lottery.
Yeah, lucky, awesome. Lucky person. I love. No, I never won. Win anything. All right.
I won. Okay. I didn't know. I won a sticky pack.
Yes.
From Shonen Jump, and I was like, oh okay.
Okay. All right, well, it's time for the rankings, I say.
Wait, we're not going to talk about the new feature?
Oh, right, the new feature. I never look at the features, honestly.
But this one is interesting.
Yeah, it's, okay, it's the Nihongo lesson, where basically we learn a new word, and
in
then,
Japanese.
Yep, in Japanese, and then see it in many different versions. This time around, we have Yakusoku, which means promise, like the type Raku from Nisekoi made to a girl a long time ago. Yeah.
If you make a promise to marry a girl, try to remember her name.
It's like, Susan? But yeah, if you make a promise, keep it, otherwise you'll disappoint all the little people who are counting on you. Tip, don't promise what you can't deliver.
What's up?
Yep, and then we've got some, you know, different versions like Yakusoku wo mamoru. This literally means to protect your promise. You see this a lot in manga. If you ever want to make a promise, say this.
Yakusoku wo mamoru. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they don't say the wo, but it's really o. So you see wo, you would just say the o.
Well,
trust me, I don't know how it works, but that's just how it is. Okay,
see.
Next one. Yeah, the next one is Yakusoku shimasu. And if you want to say, let's make a promise, we got you covered.
Indeed.
No. That's for if you ever want to make a promise, say this. Yakusoku
shimasu. Right.
Yeah,
Yakusoku shimashou. If you find yourself in a situation like Usopp, be smart and say you can't make that promise.
Say that a lot. It will help out a lot.
Mm-hmm. And then yakusoku wa dekimasen.
I can't promise that.
I guess that's what it is. It's out of weird out of order. But yeah. All right, now it's time for the rankings.
Yes.
Starting with number 4.
Hmm.
Let's see.
There were some good chapters this week. That's the hard part now.
I know. I don't know what order to put it in. I will say.
Pick up randomly.
Might as well. 4th place is Nisekoi.
Okay. Why?
Well, it was funny, but I think it was out of the good chapters, of which there were many, it was kind of a little not as exciting, you know? It was more, but it was really funny, so, I mean, it deserves to be in the top 4. How about you? What's your number 4?
Well, that's not my 4. My 4 is Stealth Symphony.
Okay.
Is it a chapter? I mean, I wish it could rank higher, but there are chapters better than it. With the whole learning about some of the characters, even though we don't really get most of their names yet still. And with the Dragon Heirloom thing that was going on. That was funny. And then, yeah, just, you know, basically it was a chapter that didn't have to do with Jig for once. I'm not saying Jig is bad, it's just he reminds me of a character that is the main character of another series, but doesn't really end up, they're not as interesting because they just... He's just there to give a plot. He's a MacGuffin right now.
Right.
That's what he is. But yeah, the characters were more interesting than him.
Right, yeah.
That's a lot to say. I still see more from Choma, because he's supposedly the main character. He better be putting out a lot than just being invisible.
Yeah, well, we'll see. It's kind of an interesting concept that we'll probably never actually get to see him all the way. So we'll have to kind of see what happens with that.
He's very noble, though, Choma.
Yeah.
That's a personality I have trouble getting used to, since, you know, most protagonists are like, yeah, I'm going to do this and stuff. You know, oh, I'm going to do what you want me to do. He's like, oh, it's okay.
Yeah.
I understand. It's a good thing you want to do. I'm like,
right. Well, yeah. All right. Third place is okay. I'm gonna put All You Need Is Kill in third place.
Okay.
It was just really, really, really good. I mean, come on. There's some really good stuff going on there, with Blank's actual backstory. And I like it. It's a really good backstory, and also kind of really terrifying and tragic in its own way. So yeah, definitely love it. All right, third place for you, Mo.
I had to say, Toriko.
Toriko's in third place. Okay, how come?
Well, the whole finding that when looking at how them trying to find where that Nitro was kind of silly and also dumb, because it's like, dude, you haven't tried checking the window. It's like, you check the window.
Yeah.
Hey, look, window's open. You mean we look for nothing? And yeah, Xavier just humiliated himself by using voice shout whatever like twice in a row.
Yeah, it definitely was fun. I liked it. All right, second place. I'm going to put One Piece at second place.
Okay.
It drops down to second place mostly because the whole Usopp making his stand felt disingenuous, just because, you know, we've seen this before, or we shouldn't have to see this again, kind of is my feeling. But the backstory with Kuros was really interesting, and I kind of like this whole idea. It raises some questions that I'm really interested in having answers to, namely, how did he go from being this murderer to the king's son-in-law, basically? If he ever actually married the king's daughter, which hasn't been 100% confirmed. I mean, having kids out of wedlock is the thing that happens, though, you know, we'll kind of have to see what happened with that. And I'm legitimately curious, so I want to see where that goes to. And I've also kind of started just wondering, I wonder if him not having a leg as a toy will be reflected when he's in his design when he's a human again.
Probably missing a leg, yeah.
Yeah, so you're kind of wondering, did he lose his leg when he was a toy, and would that influence his appearance as a human, or did he lose his leg before? And if yes, that will probably be included in the flashback.
I hope that's before, because if he actually lost his leg when he was a toy, now imagine where his leg suddenly appeared. He's like, oh my god, hey, we found him. We found a leg.
It's like scrap heap just suddenly turns into a pile of bodies. It's like, oh my gosh.
It'll be like Full Metal Alchemist's at the very end.
Oh yeah.
With how Al found his body.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I'd be like, this is nasty. But anyway, all right, number two for you, Mo. What do you have?
This was hard to decide. There's, like I said, there's so many good chapters.
I know, right?
And I have to say, this fight it all, One Piece for second place for me as well.
Okay.
First of all, I like that color spread, but even though I have to agree that the whole Usopp thing, doing the usual was kind of recycled a bit. It was still good, generally, but that wasn't what gave it to me. It was finding out like some bit about Kairos' past. Kairos?
I think it's Kairos.
I had a character in Skyrim whose name similar to that, except you replace K with an S. The heck?
I think it's Kairos.
Okay, right. It's Kairos.
All right. Now for number one.
Obviously, I know what mine is.
Yeah, well, mine's going to be World Trigger.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was just really good. I mean, I've been really enjoying the series, and the cliffhanger of what is going to happen to these characters, are they going to be okay, it really has me invested, so that's why I'm putting it as my number one. Hmm. So what's your number one?
Serve of the End.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, I liked it, but it still carries enough baggage that I'm thinking, it's like, I'm not putting it in my rankings just yet.
Yeah, why did it be One Piece? I know I'm surprised too, but
yeah.
It's more just because when I rank something, like I said, I rank something about how it makes me feel when I read it. This one made me just look and go, okay, somebody might die. It's not good.
True.
I mean, the one character Derek doesn't like that I actually like. I'd be like, oh, okay, that's a lot to deal with, and But the whole, you know, just a lot of like some like subtle reveals of what to expect, and how you said that that pretty much you have like sort of an angel in him or something. Angels being bad for one.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. So
I mean, they're not fallen. I haven't really seen a bad angel that's an actual angel be bad.
Yeah. Fallen angels are actual angels, so. You know.
Yeah, but I want to see a two-winged angel be bad, not just be. But then in this case, they're being bad because because they see too much bad that they want to get rid of the bad that they have to be bad to get rid of it.
What? Stop that! All right. Well, interesting choice. I mean, I definitely like that chapter this week a lot more, but yeah, still not putting it in my top four list.
Well, I didn't really enjoy the World Trigger chapter myself, personally.
Boo. Oh, well.
Boo to you.
Boo-hoo. All right, then. Those were the rankings. Now, we don't have any emails to read or anything, so just remember, burninglizardstudios@gmail.com or just burninglizardstudios.com or at burninglizard on Twitter. Questions, comments, we will read them. I should think of a hashtag to use, that way I can search for that and always, you know, make it easier for people to reach us. But all right, then, I'd say that is it for this week. We have gone over everything and we are ready to start next week's episode, so hopefully you all will listen to that one as well and enjoy it. So in the meanwhile, I have been your main host, Derek, and I was joined by
Mo.
Indeed. Yep. This has been Manga Cube episode 89 for the week of March 17th, 2014.
And remember, manga is always better.
We will see you all next week.